It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. We found three people who weren't watching the Super Bowl. Georgia Dow from iMore, Christina Warren from Microsoft, and Engadget's Devendra Hardware. Lots to talk about, including tech companies past and present at the Super Bowl, Apple's FaceTime flaw, and their spanking of Facebook and Google, and the dangers of giving your DNA to the FBI. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 704, recorded Sunday, February 3rd, 2019. To the woodshed with you. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Thousand Eyes. Companies that run in the cloud rely on Thousand Eyes. It's the place they go first to see, understand, and improve the digital experience of their cloud-based applications and services. Do the cloud right and improve services for your customers and employees today. Visit ThousandEyes.com/TWiT. And by Sophos Cybersecurity. In an age of evolving cyber threats, you need evolved cybersecurity. Powered by artificial intelligence, Sophos can detect threats before they strike, killing ransomware, viruses, and other cyber threats dead in their tracks. Get a free security scan and or a free trial today at Sophos.com. And by Quip. Get a fresh start every day with Quip, the first subscription electric toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association. Visit getquip.com/twit to get your first refill pack free when you purchase any Quip electric toothbrush. And by LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. Secure every password-protected entry point to your business and reduce the threat of breach at lastpass.com/twit. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the latest tech news. And I am so glad that on a Super Bowl Sunday, we were able to get three nerds who don't care about sports at all on the show. I hope that's you, Devendra Hardawar, falling over saying, I do care about sports.
No, pretty much me. All I care about are movie trailers right now, today. Yeah,
because it's Slash Film. Is this a big day for movie trailers?
Oh, yeah. All the biggest movie trailers of the years drop on Super Bowl.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's fun. Yeah.
But the movies that are coming in the next few months are the crappiest movies of the year.
It's not a good, normally January is the bad month, but yeah. This is not a good period.
I keep seeing ads
movies
for that Battle Angel movie. Mm-hmm. And they showed trailers last summer and it looked terrible then, but now I know that they didn't release it during the Christmas prestige season, that it actually is terrible.
I actually hear it's pretty good though.
Oh,
surprisingly.
See?
Yeah.
There you go.
It's by Robert Rodriguez. And I like Alita,
he's great.
So I'm looking forward to it.
And it's based on a comic book, and of course, everybody knows movies based on comic books are uniformly perfect.
Well, it's based on an anime, which is even more dangerous, right? Like, ooh, after Ghost in the Shell, I was terrified.
Also with us, I bet she cares about this a little bit because her handle's Film Girl, Christina Warren from Microsoft, Senior Cloud Dev Advocate at Microsoft.
Yeah.
Hi, Christina.
Hello, Leo. Happy to be here.
We would never ask you to come early on Oscar Day or Golden Globe Day. In fact, you're the...
No, that would be, it'd be hard. But, you're the but person, for this...
Ah, who cares? But there are some commercials we'll want to see, yes?
Definitely. I'm all about the brands. I'm all about the ads. But as we were kind of talking about beforehand, they're on YouTube pretty instantaneously. So the live aspect, like the halftime show, I do enjoy watching. Although this year it's going to be more about laughter about who they were able to finally convince to do it. But...
Because the halftime show was up in the air for a while, but they have Maroon 5.
Yeah, they have Maroon 5, but the problem was that the Maroon 5 has had a hard time getting people to be like, oh yeah, we'll do guest appearances with you.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Because people are upset with the NFL over the Colin Kaepernick thing, and so there was all of that. But that'll be interesting to watch. I always like the halftime shows, but... I'm not going to pretend to be a fan of the sports ball. Plus, I just got back from traveling, and so my body is still not sure what day or time zone I'm in. So.
There's no football in Milan. There's fashion in Milan.
Fashion in Milan.
Did you see any fashion?
Oh, I did. Mm. I did. I went to some of the stores near the Duomo, and it's nice.
And to keep us all sane, a Canadian for whom this is not in any way the World Series of football, Georgia Dow. Hi, Georgia.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great to have you. You're in your your lab, it looks like.
It's my office. This is my little tiny area of freedom. So, yeah.
Do you rewire people in your practice? Looks like you've got soldering irons, snippers.
I do have all of that. That's more like my art area. So I have my little art area over here. So I do art and therapy at the same time. Well, not at the same time, but in the same kind of space of time to that. So
I do have to say, do you all remember the first .com to advertise in the Super Bowl and what a big deal that was?
Yeah. Wasn't it pets.com?
I think so.
It was that first year, and obviously that puppet, the sock puppet they spent all that money on, and then, it went out of business. And so somebody smart, paid for the pets.com sock puppet to make an appearance in their ad for everyone deserves a second chance or something.
pets.com. This year, now back then, a Super Bowl ad cost a couple million dollars. This year it will be $5.5 million for a 30-second ad. The highest ever. In fact, it's been flat at $5 million for the last 3 years. So this is, I guess, because it's the Patriots and a big Los Angeles team, the Rams, this is going to be a big market and they expect big audiences. Here's an article. 8.com has spent millions of Super Bowl ads that don't exist anymore. Pets.com. Epidemic.com. I don't even remember them.
I don't either.
Lifeminers.com.
It's hard to sell an epidemic.
Yeah. Yeah, they must have been really good ads. Huh? OurBeginning.com, I think that was a dating site. NetPliance, eStamp, E1040, On Money, EDS, the Herding Cats ad, and the Survivors. I don't remember any of those.
I remember the pets.com one.
That's the only one I remember, yep. This in 2000, which was the height of the dot-com bubble and the burst, was right after that, 19 startups bought Super Bowl advertisements. Now, this year, there's going to be a lot of high tech on the Super Bowl. Amazon will be back. They've done some fun ads, haven't they, in previous years. I'm not going to show you any of these because no spoilers, right? No spoilers, but look for Harrison Ford, Forrest Whitaker, Ilana Glazier, I don't know who that is, and Abby Jacobson. They're from Broad City.
Yeah.
They're the best.
Oh, that's nice. That's good. That's almost like a podcast. And and astronaut twins Scott and Mark Kelly, they'll all be in the Echo ads. ADT, Google will have ads again, two commercials. Your company, Microsoft, it looks like they're going to take that holiday ad and do a sequel to that.
Yeah, they did. They released the extended version a couple of days ago, and I'm going to say this as unbiased as I possibly can, but I saw it when I was in Milan, and I was like, this is a good ad.
It's about to cry. I loved the Christmas ad. I loved it. It was a beautiful ad about a special needs kid who had this special accessible controller for the Xbox. And all his friends were, he's going to do it. And they were all running over and they saw him, whatever it is, break his high score or whatever. And they were all cheering for him. It was a great ad. So we're going to see the sequel to that.
Yeah, he's visited again and there's some other kids that show off the accessible controller.
Okay. Mint Mobile will do an ad. That's one of those MVNOs. Simply Safe, who I should mention is a sponsor of our content. T-Mobile, Verizon. So look for, I'm not going to show any of these because I want you to enjoy your Super Bowl free of knowledge.
spoilers for ads.
No
ads. We're in now.
You know, TiVo, I didn't know this. They've done this a couple of years in a row now. TiVo has a game skip button now. So
I love it.
So I love this idea. You can, if you're watching the Super Bowl for the ads, not the game, you TiVo it and then, which I am doing, and then you could just go watch the ads. I like that idea.
I'll be YouTubing later. Just want to watch the worst and the best. That's it.
I like to watch them in vivo. I like to watch.
Do you?
Yeah, I like to watch them in the ambiance. In fact, I'd like to be going to get a sandwich and see the ad out of the corner of my eye. So then I really know what real people are seeing of this $5.5 million production. Was that Jeff Bridges? I think that was Jeff Bridges, and that's all I know. Anyway, so we will. That's all we're going to talk about the Super Bowl. It's over. It's done. Somebody won. Somebody lost. There were probably bad calls, and there was probably a wardrobe malfunction. Maroon 5, their clothes fell off. I don't know. I'm just saying. First quarter results are in for Apple. This was going to be Apple's no good, very bad quarter. Tim Cook, remember a couple of weeks ago, downgraded their estimates for profit. You know what? They didn't have such a bad quarter. They did all right, right? Any takeaways from this Devendra Hardware?
$84 billion is okay.
Yeah,
it's okay.
That's a lot of money.
They're going to survive. I think they're going to survive.
They'll be fine.
Maybe. Okay. I'm just calling that.
Not going out of business.
5%. You know, we have international sales up 62%. I guess that's okay.
Now, this is the first one where they're not breaking down the individual sales for products, especially for the iPhones, right?
Right. Yeah, this is the first time that they are not saying number of units of iPhones sold, which I don't love that move. I mean, I get it, but I don't love it. I don't love it when any company does that, but yeah. I mean, it is what it is.
It's clear you're hiding something, right? And what shame is being hidden right now? Is it lower iPhone XR sales? We don't know at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, in fairness, they never actually broke out by like the model series. Like they would never say you sold this many models of this or this or this. So you would usually what would happen is the mix would be extrapolated based on the, like the margin on the devices. And that's how you would figure out, well, they sold more, you know, the newer devices than the older ones. But the fact that they're not breaking it out at all, I mean, I think what it indicates, as a lot of people expected and as their own, you know, pre-quarter, I guess declaration said, is that they're selling fewer phones than they used to. Now, I think that's okay, just because smartphones, we've reached a point where we're at saturation and, you know, the growth period is basically gone, right? Like, and so I understand that if you think the market is going to be basing its valuation of your company on certain growth percentages, in sales, and you start to see a decline, not because your product isn't still popular, but because everyone has a phone and because ownership cycles are becoming longer and longer, then I do understand the idea of saying, well, we would rather not break out these numbers. But I think that, you know, when people were trying to say, oh, well, that's not what it's about, and then, you know, they have to, lower their earnings estimates because things did not sell the way they were anticipating, for whether it was China or pricing or what the reason may be, that just adds credence to the idea that, well, you know, this is a convenient time to maybe not paper over the problem, but to, as you were saying, kind of hide something or make it less obvious what's happening.
Yeah. I mean, there's multiple things going on, too. Like, as you're saying, phones are lasting longer and they're getting better. And we also know, like, Apple's been trying to push up that average sales price with the, you know, the XS and the Plus and everything. So I think that there may be some pushback to that as well. Like, things are getting so expensive. I still have my 10 from last year and I felt no real need to upgrade. I'm also seeing people go from the 10 last year to the 10R this year, which in many ways is a step down other than screen size. So there's a lot of confusion in the product line too, I think. So maybe this year with a full-fledged redesign, we'll see something better.
Cook was asked specifically about the theory that one of the reasons iPhone sales were down 15% this quarter. By the way, this is the quarter that you would see a big jump. This is their big quarter, right?
Right, right. This is the holiday quarter, yeah. Right.
He was asked specifically, is it prices? And Cook said no. But his answer was kind of odd. He said the iPhone XS matched the price of the iPhone X. The XR was right in the middle of where the entry iPhone 8 and the entry iPhone Plus had been priced. So actually, it's a pretty small difference in the United States compared to last year. But actually, if you look at any individual phone, it's definitely more expensive. Nobody buys the average price phone. They buy a phone. And even the XR was more expensive than the base model 8. Which was itself more expensive than the iPhone 7. So Apple has, they've been ratcheting the price up, but Cook seems, at least in public, to be fairly clear that he doesn't think that the drop in numbers is due to that. He does say the price was high in areas where the exchange rate wasn't so good, like China. They also, Luca Maestri, their CFO, highlighted the installed base. And this is something I think you're going to hear more and more from Apple, because what Cook said was, well, you know, we make our phones to last a long time. So what that means is when somebody buys a new phone, they hand down the old phone. And as a result, the installed base is high. And for the first time, they gave a number, 900 million actively used iPhones, up year over year in all five geographic segments. In fact, they say it grew almost 75 million in the last 12 months. This is very, you know, typical of a company, which is we're going to highlight the stat that makes us look good.
Right. And here, what this also indicates and what they would kind of push towards is to say, okay, this is saying two things. One, look at this huge number that makes us look good. But number two, the big thing that Apple has been focusing on, I'd say about the last 12 quarters, it's really been a lot about the last 3 years, they've been doing this massive push into services, is that if you're looking at services, and they've said, you know, it's going to be, you know, a $20 billion, you know, business on its own, or, you know, by this date and whatnot, then that is going to, you can say, well, if we have 958 million, you know, active install base, then you can start to extrapolate the potential of service revenue based on that number. And if that number continues to go up, then that's an indication that service revenue will continue to climb and will continue to grow, because you have that install base where you can attach Apple Music or iCloud or, you know, Apple Pay or whatever else you're wanting to kind of, or, you know, put on it. You have that user base to go after. So I think that it's both the big number that says, oh, this, look at how great this big number is, and also it's also kind of an indicator to analysts to say, and this is this potential huge target number that we have to get additional money out of, because they're in our ecosystem. And as a result, you know, we have the ability to attach, you know, X percentage of services onto this number of people.
It's also why Apple goes after privacy, because I think that as more and more people are caring about privacy, they're going to be heading down to Apple, because Apple just has a better track record for that. And so they're going to be doing more and more services that are going to be on the Apple ecosphere. So I think that this revenue is actually going to increase a lot more as people are more aware of what's happening and how companies are misusing, you know, their own data.
Yeah, this was probably a bad week to double down on that.
Though, I was just going to say.
Yeah,
because, of course.
Yeah, fair.
We're talking about the FaceTime flaw that allowed people using group FaceTime to eavesdrop on other people, at least briefly, until they either didn't pick up or picked up the call. Did Tim Cook, I didn't listen to the analyst call and I didn't read the notes. Did he say anything about the FaceTime flaw in that call? They did apologize.
Yeah, they apologized and removed the feature until they're able to roll out a software update. But yeah, I mean, look, Apple rightly, I think, has a really great reputation for privacy. And
yeah, this doesn't ding that. This is a flaw.
No, it doesn't.
It's a bug.
This is a bug, but it's a bad bug.
They didn't get caught doing something wrong like Facebook did, that was a purpose.
Right.
They made a mistake. They tried to fix. Yeah, they tried to fix it as quickly as possible. You know, they might have given a little bit of a runaround. I get that. That sometimes happens. It's not great. And it's a really big deal. But this is really different from them choosing to sell your information and trying to be sneaky about it. Apple, again, wants to keep your business. So it makes every sense that they're going to try to make sure they're as secure as possible.
They did respond quickly. Well, they responded quickly to the 9 to 5 Mac story.
When they got caught, they were really fast about it.
And I don't think it's fair to say caught either. I mean,
No. So, when the issue made it to their account. I mean, people tried, but you know,
there's a family of people. Michelle Thompson, who's a 14-year-old, discovered this a week before it was revealed in 9 to 5 Mac. A security researcher found it later. Tried to get through to Apple, but she's, you know, not a developer. She's not somebody Apple gets security reports from on a regular basis. So she says she never received a response from the company. She actually went to Fox News to tell them, look, there's a serious security privacy flaw in FaceTime. Apple did, in its apology, say, we thank the Thompson family for reporting the bug, and we're going to improve our process by which we receive and escalate these reports in order to get them to the right people as fast as possible. All she got was, mm-hmm. a note saying you should join the, if you want to report bugs, you need to join the developer program.
Clearly, it's kind of a tough thing too, like coming from the IT side of things, right? It's hard to tell when to take these things seriously and when not to. So that's understandable. It's just a shame that this was the one missed, support ticket that was one of the most egregious privacy flaws. Like, I know this was not purposeful, but, you know, the people who signed up for Facebook's privacy and information sharing thing, they at least knew, like, Facebook was doing this and they were getting paid for it. It was like a contract. This is an insane bit of, like, spy tech, basically. Yeah. Like, this is something that I know, like, spy agencies have been trying to cook up things like this so that they can listen on your conversations.
Well, but how useful would it be if you were the NSA or the CIA and you knew about this? This only happened when Apple released Group FaceTime, which was just a couple of versions of iOS 12 ago. It was like 12.1. So it hasn't been around that long. But let's say you're in the NSA. You're not saying, oh, rubbing your hands with glee, saying, oh, finally I can listen in on Putin's conversations, because it rings the phone, right? And it only
works. NSA is calling. And Putin's like, oh, I'm not going to answer the phone.
Yeah. So it's not that useful. But you know, it's embarrassing. Apple did respond. Once the 9to5 Mac report came out, they responded immediately by turning off Group FaceTime. It's still off. And as you said, Christina, they say they'll have a patch this week. And Group FaceTime.
Yeah, no, totally.
Back.
And I mean, in terms of bugs to have, I think you point out, like, it's not good at all.
Happen.
It could conceivably be embarrassing, but it could be way worse. Yeah. The phone is going to ring. So the longest you're talking about, maybe 20 seconds that you might be able to hear something. And I mean, it's not great. I think the video aspect was probably worse than maybe even the audio stuff. The fact that you could maybe see people, that's not great, but they fixed it. And I think that the good news here is that because they were able to fix things server side, because of what this was, they could put a stop to it. You know, on the server side level, they just disabled the group FaceTime feature, and now they're going to issue a patch. So this wasn't even, I mean, this could have been really bad if this was something where they would have had to release an update that everybody's phone would have to be updated.
Anybody who's ever had an 8-minute voicemail message from a butt dial knows there's not that much going on. Have you ever sat and listened to all 8 minutes?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, because
you hear a lot of.
I usually get bored really quickly because you have someone's full 8 minutes.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, I've done it just because you're kind of curious, because sometimes, you know, again, there's that one time, most of the time you delete it, right? But you hear interesting conversations, you're like, wait a minute.
All right, we're going to rob the bank at 8 tonight.
Exactly.
Everybody in on the job.
Maybe about you. Yeah.
Well, this is what I'm saying. That's what happens, is this is like the worst case scenario where somebody's talking smack about you and unknowingly calling you. This is where voice assistants, I think, can be very dangerous, because you can imagine if you're talking about someone, you accidentally invoke the voice assistant that then calls that person and starts to leave a long message, you know, talking poorly about that person. No, I mean, I've maybe listened once, like the 8-minute ones. Usually you just delete, but you might hear a few occasional things. You're like, oh, so that's what they think about so-and-so.
It does happen. There's a guy who lost his job and is suing his ex-boss. This happened last spring. He accidentally butt-dialed his boss, or pocket-dialed him, as the Post says. And he was talking to his wife about his boss, and the boss heard him say negative things, and he didn't like it, so he fired him. and now there's a lot. Now there's a lawsuit because he continued to listen and violated his privacy.
Oh, that's interesting.
Is it really violating your privacy? I don't know. I don't think that's going down, though, because there's no way. Like, you call someone else.
You sent me a message, dude, and I'm just listening to your message.
Listening to the message, it does not sound like a violation of privacy.
Yeah, incompetence is not.
And I don't even think you could say it's an unlawful dismissal, because, you say something bad about someone, no one's going to want to work with you after that. So.
All right, let's talk about, you brought it up, Devendra, we should talk about it. Both Google and Facebook were spanked by Apple this week because they were using their enterprise certificates in a way that Apple said that's not appropriate. Apple has restored Facebook's. I imagine by now they've restored Google's. The problem is that when you disable an enterprise certificate, you disable also in-house apps. The Google Bus app, the Gbus app, stopped working. So
they're just stuck there. They couldn't go home.
I can't leave. I don't know when the bus is coming. So what? So Devendra, you're obviously up on this. What was, first of all, let's start with Facebook. What were they doing?
From what I'm hearing, it was a research app. I haven't fully covered the story, but it was an internal research app. And it was something where Facebook was paying people basically to give them full access to everything on their phones.
$20 a month. They gave root network access to the Facebook for all data, not just Facebook data, but all data.
All data.
But which they were told. They were told, right?
They were told.
And you guys, we were all young. So these are 13-year-olds.
Yeah.
This is not fair. They can't really give access. They, like, you know, if you're happy if your teen child had breakfast. Like, they can't make these big decisions. They don't get it. They're like $20.
Even if you accept that,
that's a lot of
bubble
gum.
You could argue like if that's a worthy thing or not. But I think the really egregious part is that this is a continuation of something Facebook had before. It was a VPN app called Onavo. And they were using that app to track user behavior and track things that were happening on their phones. They were, you know, that was swatted down. This research app is basically a rebadge of that technology, which Apple has already said no to.
Facebook, which is you break the rules, you get caught, you apologize, then you do it again.
Right. Well, and what they did, I mean, and partially I'm kind of happy that this whole instance happened. I obviously feel terrible for anybody who, any employees who worked at Facebook or Google who lost access to their stuff because, you know, I work at a big tech company and we have, you know, like internal enterprise apps and some of them are really important and it would be really frustrating to not have access to those things. But this has been a really common way around the App Store for a long time that has kind of gone under the radar that hasn't had a lot of reporting around it where, you know, Apple won't allow certain types of applications in the App Store for whatever reasons. They say it violates, you know, collection information or, you know, maybe it's an emulator and we don't support this sort of thing or whatever. And so instead what happens is people get an enterprise certificate and you know they pay for one of those accounts or they just get a regular dev certificate where you can now have even more you know testers and they issue you know copies with the sort of around you know kind of in back channels and people install them, they install you know the certificate on their phone and then they're able to you know download the app directly from the developer and people use that as a way to you know do stuff that otherwise wouldn't be there, whether it's, you know, pirated, you know, sort of stuff or, you know, maybe something that again, like in Facebook's case is rebadging an app that the App Store wouldn't let in. And in some cases it might be legitimate. It might be like, I really want this SSH type of scenario or some sort of code editor on my phone. This won't be allowed at the App Store, but I can get an enterprise certificate and release it to however many thousands of people. Cool. So this has been happening, but nothing's been done about it. And so if anything, I'm kind of glad that this is kind of drawing attention to the fact that there is this whole shadow like app economy using these things. And there, and especially in other countries where, you know, people have to go around things maybe to get around censorship or other stuff. Like we should acknowledge that this is happening because Apple really loves to talk about how safe and secure its store is. And by the most part it is, but this is a really easy hole, like a really easy in run around those policies.
Well, that's an important point. You can laud Apple for respecting privacy, but the minute you put any third-party app on your iPhone, you're being monitored in some way or other, whether it's location monitoring. I mean, and you give them permission, I understand, but Apple's privacy policy only extends up to the point of Apple's apps, and after that, it's anything goes.
Well, also, it's the difference between the apps that are being available within the store and these apps that we're
these
talking
are,
about.
These are far worse. Security. I understand.
Right. These are,
so let me just...
There's nothing wrong with that. Like, that's the thing. I don't... It sounds like we're getting to the point where it's like, oh, all these enterprise certificate apps are bad.
No, not at all.
That's the way we have to... Like, when I see apps early, this is the process I have to go through to see something before it's on the store. There are certain loopholes there. It's more like, what Facebook did. And to be clear, this Onavo VPN I'm talking about, I covered them when they launched like several years ago, and it was a really interesting app idea because it was supposed to be this little app that would basically compress your data and save you like cell phone bandwidth and stuff. Like it'll save your bandwidth cap. When Facebook bought it, everyone was like, oh, they're going to do something terrible with this. And not long after that, they did something terrible with it. So this is all an example of Facebook being the worst and trying to get away with being the worst, like again and again.
Yeah, at some point you have to say, oh, this is intentional.
They get away.
This is not,
they, yeah, they, they keep on doing it. And people, like, again, it's like these companies too large to fail, because Apple's going to take a whole bunch of heat if they just cut them out and say, listen, we can't trust you. We're going to have to check everything that you do beforehand. But the worst part is Facebook was doing this, got caught for it. They're already, I think, back in. I think that they've already said, okay, you're all restored to that. But they were doing this in order to catch what was the wave with the young generation and then be able to buy out whatever applications were important to be able to do it so that they could. Exactly.
Yeah.
So let me, by the way, a lot of credit to John Constein and TechCrunch, because they broke the story and they did a lot of great reporting on this. Constein had written, as you did, Devinder, and many others, about the Onavo Protect. Apple changed its policies to prohibit the way Onavo Protect worked. So Facebook, that app was taken out of the store. Facebook took it out of the store, or Apple blocked it from the store, but it was gone. It looks like, according to Constein, they got somebody to look at the code, and the Facebook research app is basically, he says, we found it featured tons of similar code and references to the Onavo Protect program, which meant Facebook was intentionally disobeying Apple's privacy policy.
Yep.
Now, the idea of an enterprise shocked. No, the idea of an enterprise certificate is completely normal. Many, many companies have internal apps that they want to put on iPhones.
Absolutely.
In order to do that, they have an enterprise certificate. Apple certainly allows this. There also is a test flight app that you can use if you want to test apps. This is normal. And in fact, Facebook's enterprise certificate was used for seeing the day's lunch schedule, coordinating office collaboration, commutes. They used it for pre-launch internal testing versions of Facebook's own app and Instagram. So Apple, which could have simply said, okay, Project Atlas, which is this app, is yanked. You can't do it anymore. Instead, they spanked, I'm sorry, they spanked Facebook by yanking this enterprise app, knowing that this would be completely disruptive. As apparently it was.
Well, they revoked the certificate. I mean, in this case, again, I think you could make the argument that the only way Apple knew that they could shut down access to the app would be to revoke the certificate.
Don't they have a kill switch for the app?
No, the kill switch is the certificate. The kill switch is the enterprise certificate, right? So honestly, the biggest mistake that Facebook made, if you're doing this, you know you're violating the App Store rules. You're using this enterprise certificate as a way to distribute apps outside the App Store, which is not the way it's supposed to be done. It's supposed to be for internal purposes, whatnot, for testing. It's not supposed to be, we have a research project and we're paying people $20, you know, a month, and we're getting this information for our business. Like, this is not like what, how you're supposed to be using these types of tools. And rather than signing up for a new enterprise account, which would have been the best thing, and having a different certificate to use it, they used their existing enterprise certificate.
So you don't think it was punitive on Apple's part? This was just their only recourse.
It was their only recourse. If Facebook and Google, when they ran the similar thing, had used, I mean, do I
think it's punitive? I think Tim Cook calls Mark Zuckerberg and says, "Hey, pull Project Atlas."
Yeah. You're not wrong, but I also feel like at this point, if you know, I mean, was there some punitive stuff to it? I'm sure there was, but I think you can also make the argument that says you've already banned this type of content from your app store. You've already said this sort of thing isn't allowed. You have
proof they spanked them.
Yeah. But you have proof that this is doing it. The only
I'm not saying it's inappropriate. I'm just curious. No, did Apple say, all right, to the woodshed with you?
I'm sure they did, but I'm sure that, I mean, you could make the argument where they could, I guess, claim that they're not being punitive by saying, well, the only way we can guarantee that this isn't being used anymore is to revoke the certificate. And if that has, you know, like collateral damage with other apps that use the certificate, so be it. But
See, I would have went after them much more strongly and been straight up like, this is the plutonium tea, you know, like, listen, sorry, you do this, you get caught. This is looks bad upon us. And we're going to punish the whole system to that, because it does. It ends up looking bad upon Apple because people don't really understand the difference between what they have on their platform. It's a really big issue. And it was really embarrassing.
Here's what Apple told TechCrunch. We design our enterprise developer program solely for the internal distribution of apps within an organization. Yep. Facebook has been using their membership to distribute a data collecting app to consumers, which is a clear breach of their agreement with Apple. Any developer using their enterprise certificates to distribute apps to consumers will have their certificates revoked, which is what we did in this case to protect our users and their data. And, oh, by the way, they did it to Google, too. Shortly after they did it to Facebook, They TechCrunch discovered Google's ScreenWise Meter surveillance app, very much like the Facebook Research app, was doing the same thing. Apple canceled that enterprise. And that's when Google's GBus program and others stopped working. Now, this is another case of Google telling people, here's the message you'll see. The ScreenWise Meter app collects information on your internet usage, from how long you visit a site to the apps you choose. It also manages your participation in a panel. It's kind of like, and I do this, the Google app to earn Google Opinion Rewards program to earn payments. And I do that once in a while. I answer a survey. ScreenWise, like the Facebook Research app, was open to users as young as 13. Constein on TechCrunch says that about 5% of the users were underage of the Facebook app. So it wasn't particularly aimed at teenagers, although it was 13 to 35. So it was aimed at younger users. And it's clearly Facebook's intent to figure out what the hell are the kids doing. Because they ain't using Facebook.
Yeah. What is TikTok? I don't know.
Yeah, what is this TikTok? Why are they doing that? So Google quickly canceled its ScreenWise Meter. And apparently, I don't know how long it took for their enterprise certificate to come back, but Facebook's was turned back on in under 2 days. I think Google got theirs fixed pretty quickly.
Yeah, Apple actually made a statement that they were working, or maybe Google did. They made a statement they were actively working with Apple or Google. You know, they made a statement they were working together to get things back up and running.
It's a pretty big stick that Apple wields, though, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I mean, there are questions
it's on
to
their
ask about
OS.
That.
It's, you're right. Yeah. You expect it, right? Like, you expect that. You go against another huge company and embarrass them. You expect to kind of get hit for it. And it wasn't a big hit. Like, really, within a week, you're all back up. And again, it's a lot of money when you do it. But in the large run, it's really, really tiny. Like, this was like, I don't think it was a big stick. I think that it was a small
poke. I don't think it's a shot across the bow. It would be a shame if none of your employees was to know what was for lunch today.
Yeah, I'm gonna disagree, just because as somebody who, again, I have enterprise apps.
I'm sure Microsoft uses this too,
yes,
right?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And we have, you know, both our own, you know, system. We bought Hockey app, which is similar to TestFlight, but obviously how that works is using an enterprise certificate. Right. And that controls things like my VPN access. And that controls things like, you know, if I'm connecting to my corporate network on my device, and that connects, you know, certain profile information. And then I have other things like certain versions of my email client or certain things that are only internal. And yes, could I get my work done without it? Of course. But it's a lot more frustrating. And if stuff were just to break, I'm not going to discount the fact that if you look at the, you know, 20, 30,000 employees, you know, at each of these companies who were probably using at least one of these devices, one of these apps that now isn't working, that this isn't a big deal. Do I think Apple was justified in doing it? Absolutely. But I think this was a lot more disruptive than people might think. And they might be rolling their eyes and saying, oh, well, you can't see what's for lunch. But what if this was something that was tied to your email or was tied to, you know, some sort of data entry app or some sort of other custom app that was really crucial to your day job, and now you don't have access to that information? And when you do have access to it again, you have to reinstall each app, redo the certificates. I mean, it's you know, people lose time, and it's frustrating, especially when the reason for this is because the company you work for decided to go around the App Store rules.
So how bad does Facebook suck? I mean, they said, no, wait a minute. You know, this is their response. Key facts about this market research program are being ignored. I'm going to do this in a Tony Soprano voice, if you don't mind. Despite early reports, there was nothing secret about this. It was literally called the Facebook Research app. It wasn't spying, as all the people who signed up to participate went through a clear onboarding process asking for their permission, and they was paid to participate. Finally, less than 5% of the people who chose to participate in this market research program were teens, all of them with signed parental consent forms. You said you wanted to do this. That $20 gift card, we was giving that to you. I mean, after all, this is kind of the foundational question. If you know that a company's invading your privacy and you're willing to trade it for some benefit, whether it's a Gmail or $20, what's wrong with that?
Sure. Okay, that's fine. But but to do that, you're distributing it on a platform that says you can't do this sort of thing.
No, I understand. And, Apple could be pissed off. They shouldn't have used an enterprise certificate. Is there any other mechanism, though, by which, by the way, both Google and Facebook's programs are still available on Android because they don't need any permission. I should point out, you can still do it on Android. But is there, I mean, you could also say, well, look, this is the only way we can do it on Apple. And we think we should have access to people and their information. Apple says, no, you can't have any of this. Only we can have this.
Yeah, I think it's more due to like the way Facebook does business too, right? I think was it this week or recently there was the lawsuit about Facebook not doing anything to stop kids from buying, you know, things from like buying in-app purchases from within games. And, like,
yeah, the fact that they actively encouraged it.
Just ignored it. They're like, whatever. Sure, let's not put any speed bumps. I think like it's that mentality, you know, that mentality of a company that would allow something like that, no matter the harm it does to its users. That's what really bothers me about Facebook. Like selling
Twitter
people
does this
selling
too,
their data,
which is
not great.
Kind of a hands off thing. Well, look, you know, this is free speech. It's the internet. You know, people are going to, if people want to set themselves on fire, we're going to let them. Why? It's not our job to stop them. And I kind of understand that,
except at the same time, Facebook is not just saying, if you want to set yourself on fire, that's fine. They're saying, please set yourself on fire and we'll pay you $20 to do it. Like, to me, that's where it kind of goes a little different. Yeah. It's like one thing to be like, do whatever you want. It's another thing to be like, we're going to actively encourage you to do this thing. You know, because we want to do a research project on you know what temperature flesh burns.
But there's
I don't
a little
know.
Bit like, of a don't people have personal responsibility? If somebody
people do, 13-year-olds don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, they got their parents to say okay.
Please. Let's be honest, even like the amount of media literacy that's out there right now, people don't really understand what they're selling off their information to or how far that information goes. If, you know, Facebook comes off in this cute little app that we're going to kind of track you versus some creepy guy that's staring in on my window, writing down my every single move. When you really understand how this is not as invisible as what you think it is, then maybe you could make an informed choice. But it's the thing is that Facebook tries to come off as this front of a cute way to chat with people when really all they're doing is they're trying to be a conduit to influence public opinion to the highest bidder and be able to gather as much information to be able to do that as efficiently as possible. And they really don't care for what purpose or cause that is. And that really bothers me about the way Facebook goes about business. I have no sympathy to them. And really, they got handled with kid gloves. If this was a small dev that got caught, you know, making
they'd
use of something.
They'd never be on Apple's platform.
They'd never be seen again. They'd be buried in the back with the trash. And Apple wouldn't feel bad. It is only because Facebook is so big that they can get away with unabashedly making use of and just trying to like just destroy people's privacy, trying to hide things, being caught constantly, and no one really does anything. Only now do I hear people really kind of getting upset and being like, ooh, Facebook is not that cute and friendly as what I thought it was. But it's taken so long. We've been talking about it in tech for a really long time, but now it's getting mainstream.
I think Facebook, I've come to the conclusion Facebook's pretty loathsome, but I trust Google for some reason. And Google, as far as I could tell, invented this. And Sheryl Sandberg took the fire that Google invented from Google to Facebook and showed them the way. Does Google get a pass?
I'm on DuckDuckGo for almost everything now. So it's sad. It's not great. They even have a mapping system. It's really sad. But it makes me feel a little bit better. Like, I'm not going to say I'm not on it for everything. So I'm.
It's hard to get out of Google. But I've started using DuckDuckGo. I've stopped using Gmail.
It works. Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm moving towards the transition. My children are actually huge like they're fully on DuckDuckGo, and they're like, "Mom, really?" I'm like, "Oh God!" But
that's interesting. They're more aware of privacy than you are.
They just like saying DuckDuckGo.
Oh, they like the name Duck.
Yeah.
They do like ducks. But no, they actually are doing it for their privacy. Yeah. So, like, you know, they. You know, I think it was because once you get comfortable with something, you just don't want to change. Change is scary for us. And so you get comfortable. The same reason that Facebook survives. Facebook actually has increased in numbers. What is up, people? Why do they have they larger numbers now of people using Facebook? I don't know. I think that we just get comfortable. I guess all this bad press was good for them.
That's the craziest thing this week, by the way. Like, after all this like privacy stuff, Facebook's earnings were glorious, amazing mm-hmm. for them. And it was kind of depressing.
So they're selling off this information, I guess. That's what I'm assuming. They're like, they've made a ton of money selling all of this information. So they're not going to stop because of this. They're going to just get sneakier. That's really, isn't that what Facebook just does? It just gets mm-hmm. better at being sneaky.
Well, I think the interesting thing, too, is that, Google's the same way, and you could say the same thing about Microsoft and Amazon and any of these things, is that it's really hard to cut any, and Apple, for sure, too, even though Apple, you know, likes to, is better about certain things, you know, than other companies. It's really hard to extricate your life from any of these big places. And I would argue that you don't necessarily, it's not necessarily beneficial to, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if my life would be better if I didn't have YouTube or if I didn't have, you know, Google Maps. Like I actually
think
it would
be better if you didn't have Facebook. Mm-hmm. Like the stats are through the roof of your levels of happiness, your levels of self-loathing go down.
I don't necessarily disagree. I don't necessarily disagree with Facebook, but I do get some things out of Instagram. I do enjoy Instagram. I do appreciate, for all of its many foibles, even Facebook Messenger as a way to communicate with people.
I've been told that that attitude is really first world privilege speaking. There are many countries where you have to have WhatsApp.
You're right.
You have to have Facebook.
You're exactly right.
I don't know if anybody has to have Instagram, but
why would anyone have to have Facebook? Sorry, I'm just gonna.
It's how you stay in touch.
I'm gonna tell you because
you don't
not only
have it, to it, have Facebook. There are other ways to. We stayed in touch. Other ways to that.
I disagree. I agree with you. I think this is a first world privilege problem. I think it's easy for us to say we can not have these things because we have the money and the privilege to communicate with people in other ways. If you live in a country, for instance, WhatsApp, where this is how people communicate, because the alternative would be really expensive phone systems where they charge you per SMS message and where you might have to have multiple phone services because of how rolling systems work. And you don't have electricity all the time because of rolling outages. So you're using the internet and you're using these tools to communicate. And for better or worse, the main methods of communication are owned by these big companies. Facebook, for instance, in India, you know, refused to let them do this, but they go into places and they say you can have access to the internet and we'll subsidize a certain amount of it. If we're going to try to, I'm not going to tell another person in another country that they can't mm-hmm. have access to the internet, even if it's through Facebook's browser or whatever, because Facebook is evil. But the alternative is they have no access whatsoever. Like, I'm not going to say that to someone. I'm not going to make that decision for another country.
Let's say that real places where we're talking about first world problems, they probably can't afford to have a phone or to have internet access at all to that. So it's already a huge issue of the digital divide. There are other ways to be able to do this. And in the end, the only way that our privacy will actually be secure is if instead of giving Facebook a slap on the hand, which is like a small fine that's really pocket change for them, would be if they invade other people's privacy without being clear and concise with that manner, would be criminal charges to that. Truly, if Citizens United and corporations mm-hmm. are people, then they should be tried as people as well.
But, you know, they're acting the way that all the other big corporations, all the oil companies, all the gas mm-hmm. companies, like everybody, like, they're doing the bad thing.
Let's be honest, it's all wrong. Like, that doesn't, like, I don't
terrible.
Like that argument
terrible.
To say that, you know, everyone else does it, so this makes it okay. I think that
it means if you're going to hold one company to a criminal account, you should do all of them. And I don't disagree with that in theory.
I agree.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But
yeah, sure.
I think it's hard to do. I also feel like it's hard to say, again, as us in a position of privilege, to say what other people who don't have our, you know, means, what decisions mm-hmm. they should make. And I feel also weird encroaching and you know, I got an argument with someone at a conference I was speaking at back in November who, you know, was kind of talking about, like, we should all get rid of our smartphones and stop doing these things. And I said, okay, well, what about people in other countries who their lives have been demonstrably made better because of this technology? And his argument was, oh, well, it's fine for them. And I find that really condescending for us to be like, well, if we have the means and we're good enough, we should get rid of this because, you know, it's better for our privacy and our means. But for people mm-hmm. who don't have access to anything else, oh, we should let them continue to be exploited. Like, I feel like that's, mm-hmm. I don't know, I have a problem with that kind of mixed message. It's either it should either be okay for everybody or it shouldn't be okay.
Yeah. I think the bigger problem, though, is that Facebook basically has a monopoly on social networking mm-hmm. on like these big groups, right? So you're going to use the service where your friends are, where your families are. I think it's easy for, you know, especially like Western first world folks, like to just give up on Facebook and you'll have other ways to interact. But yeah, if you're in India and everybody's on WhatsApp, you can't really not be there. Otherwise, you're missing out on a whole lot of like social conversations. We need more real competition for Facebook. Like, that's the biggest problem, because Facebook's power is it's a superpower. Like, it has the power of a country, you know, and I think that's kind of scary seeing what they do with it.
In some ways, they have more power than a lot of countries. Yeah. And that's the thing, is these companies are too large to fail. That's a huge problem for everyone that's out there. Like all of us, that becomes a really huge problem to that, especially when they have been caught doing such nefarious things. I think the EU has done a better job of trying to take a look into this and police that. The cutest part was when Facebook got caught with their emails and they're like, no, please don't read our emails. Those are private. They did anyways, thank God. But I think that we need to have that discussion. I think that we need to be going into it. And I think that we really need to take a look at, you know, how do we be able to police companies that, you know, have huge lobbyists and they end up being able to control the governments that want to police them?
Wouldn't the best solution, kind of a non-governmental solution, be to provide a competitor?
I mean, that's one thing. That would be great, right? But it's, I think time and again, what has helped us, looking across like so many other industries, how is driving regulated? How is alcohol regulated? How are like a lot of the major things we deal with? It's regulation. It's not the solution for everything. I think it's a combination of like regulation plus competition that creates a healthy
ecosystem. It's hard to write a regulation for this, though.
I don't know if it's hard. I think that we need to talk about it. We need to educate people that are becoming lawmakers. I think that again, like an education in technology and how is it used and why is it used is really important, because a lot of maybe older lawmakers or people that are not that technically literate are then writing laws for this, which doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and it's a problem. Definitely. Can you use, even younger people who don't know.
India's choice, which I thought was very interesting, not to allow internet.org, Facebook's attempt to provide internet access to areas that were completely non-served or underserved, the government of India refused them that license. I was told by some that it was seen almost as if the Raj had come back, if the English oppressor had come back and said, it's okay, let us handle it. Because, of course, the problem with internet.org was it was pretty much just Facebook. Yes. It had Wikipedia. Yeah. But I mean, it was like, we'll provide you with Facebook.
And also they're tracking everything, you know? I mean, so it's going...
I thought that was interesting that they could do, though, that they had the guts to do that is telling, right?
1,000%, especially since Facebook, they have done things like that in other countries, not to the extent of what they wanted to do with internet.org, but they do it other places. And, you know, a lot of phone carriers in other countries, you'll pay a certain amount of money for access to data, and the data, you'll get free Facebook, but other types of data will charge money. And so that's a huge incentive, obviously, for people to use Facebook. Right. And Facebook... I mean, at the time, there was a lot of incredulity that India would turn it down. But I agree with you. I think it's a really ballsy move to say, no, we're not going to allow that.
And the problem with competition for Facebook is anyone becomes competition to Facebook, they just buy them out.
Yeah.
Right.
That's where regulations could help.
Or worse, if you like Evan Spiegel at Snapchat, decline, they'll drive you out. Right? Mm. Snapchat is effectively being destroyed bit by bit by Facebook.
Yeah, but I think that a lot of that is on Snapchat too.
Is it?
I think their product hasn't kept up. I think that they had famously very bad, you know, privacy and security issues that they weren't really focusing on. Look, did Facebook blatantly copy? Did Instagram blatantly copy stories? Yeah, they did, and made no qualms about it. I actually kind of appreciate the honesty in that. But I feel like, you know, Snap's decline, while certainly not helped by the fact that Instagram's product was a copy, the reality also is that Instagram not just copied the feature, but made it better and continued to iterate and do things that others wouldn't.
As Snapchat to compete against something as integrated as Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram, right?
It absolutely is.
And in fact, according to the New York Times last week, they're planning to integrate the platforms completely so that an advertiser could buy all three, so that the information they glean from one will help the other. That is exactly, in fact, one California legislator said this is why we should have been much more cautious about allowing Facebook to buy WhatsApp and Instagram.
Well, completely. I mean, I think that it would have been impossible to make an argument, an antitrust argument for Instagram. You know, it was $1 billion, the best $1 billion Facebook ever spent. But at the time that it launched, you know, it didn't even, I don't even think the Android app had officially come out yet. It wasn't even fully done when the acquisition happened. It was small. You know what I mean? Facebook was actually working on its own competitor that it released a few weeks after or a few days after it bought Instagram that was terrible. I remember this because I wrote a story in the headline with something like, you know, Facebook whatever proves why Instagram is worth $1 billion. And
well, it's happened again, by the way. Instagram TV, Facebook.
Totally. Completely.
Facebook Watch. Remember that? This was their YouTube competitor.
Exactly. Yeah, but what I mean though is that like so you're not wrong, but I think that Instagram. What I was going to say though is like Instagram. I don't think there was any antitrust thing at all.
No.
But I do think that for WhatsApp, when you're spending $20 billion and a big reason they spent $20 billion was because Google, because Google was going to buy it and they had to outbid Google. I mean, that should have been looked at with a lot more scrutiny when you looked at the overlap that Facebook Messenger, which hadn't been separated in the same way and was already gearing up to compete with WhatsApp before they even bought the product. Like, I think the lawmaker is right. That's when the time for some of these things has passed us. And if we want to prevent this sort of consolidation in the future and this sort of, you know, overarching stuff in the future, then you have to look at when you're approving M&A stuff, you know, but nobody cared when it happened and it sailed through.
Or didn't understand it. Yeah.
And they didn't have enough knowledge to be able to make a viable argument and discuss that properly. And I think that that's a problem with a lot of the lawmakers that are out there. They just don't understand enough to be able to make really good laws and good arguments when they're up there looking at it and taking a look. And again, Facebook pays them a lot of money. Like if you take a look at how much money Facebook has given to different people in the government, it's a lot of their money. And there's a reason for that.
Let's take a break. Great panel. You guys are fantastic. On fire today. Georgia Dow from, I guess, senior editor iMore, right? I could say that.
Yeah, sometimes write something.
Sometimes, once in a while. Also, anxiety-videos.com. And we just love having you on, Georgia. It's great to see you.
Thank you.
Also, adore Christina. It's wonderful to have Christina Warren, senior cloud developer advocate at Microsoft. You've known her as Film Girl. She's also with Andy. What shows do you do? You do that great show.
Do Rocket.
With Rocket with Simone and the former candidate for Congress, Brianna Wu. Although Brianna says she's still running, right?
No, she's running for 2020.
2020. Here comes 2020, Brianna. Yep. 2020. That's a great show, Rocket on Relay.fm. And in fact, you're all podcasters. You're all podcasters. Oh, yeah. Devendra Hardwar / film. He's the senior editor in Gadget, by the way. I don't think I mentioned any of your actual titles earlier, so I'll give you credit now. But we just love having you on, all three of you. You're always great. On fire today.
Always fun.
Our show today brought to you by Thousand Eyes. This is a brand new sponsor and one I'm so happy to be on because I really think Thousand Eyes offers a solution that a lot of you don't even know exists. If you run a network, if you are online. This is not a consumer product. This is a business product. But if you have an online presence and stuff goes wrong, it's often impossible to figure out where it's going wrong. And I think many of us just say, well, we'll never know. What's happening in the network? It's a puffy little cloud. I don't know. Thousand Eyes knows. With Thousand Eyes, you get an immediate, unmatched view of all the networks, all the dependencies that impact your user's digital experience. The problem is they should have named it a million eyes because it isn't 1,000. It's many hundreds of thousands of sensors at every point on the network from the edge on in that can tell you exactly where your traffic is and where it's going and what's going on. As we move to the cloud, and I think cloud is so great for business. So many people are moving to the cloud. There are a lot of benefits to the cloud. You gain in agility, but you increase in risk. You lose some control. And as I said, it's kind of mysterious sometimes. When your cloud or app or service goes down, do you know really what's going on? As you scramble to find the root cause of the problem, you're losing revenue. Your employee productivity goes down. Your brand is damaged. You need Thousand Eyes. You need instant visibility into the entire service delivery path, from the cloud to your end user, including the portions you don't own or control. I think I am kind of on a mission because I am a believer in Thousand Eyes. I know these guys well, and I think you need to know about them. It's unlike anything you've seen before. It's cloud-based software built to help organizations like yours do the cloud right. A massive array of vantage points spanning the global internet everywhere, China to cloud providers, even the Wi-Fi in your local coffee shop. This is not passive old school IT monitoring, which basically lives in a silo, can only see inside the data center. Thousand Eyes' unique path tracing technology expands beyond boundaries, allowing you to see, understand, and improve the experience for all your apps, services, and websites. Regain control, ensure the best possible digital experience for your customers and employees. You've got to find out about Thousand Eyes. Big banks know about it. SaaS companies, enterprises, the world's largest, fastest-growing brands rely on Thousand Eyes to do the cloud and do it right. But maybe you don't know about it. That's why I'm on a mission. Visit Thousand Eyes, all spelled out, thousandeyes.com/twit, to see what you've been missing. And they're offering right now a handy book that everybody should have if you're thinking about cloud migration, 5 cloud migration challenges you shouldn't ignore. But there is a lot of data on the site, which I just did an event with them that was just fantastic, about where traffic from the big cloud providers gets stopped, where it gets slowed down. They know all this stuff. ThousandEyes.com/twit. Visit ThousandEyes.com/twit. Thousand Eyes lets you thrive in a connected world. You're going to hear more about them on our shows in the future because I'm kind of a Thousand Eyes buff, a fan. I didn't mention this, but I should probably mention it, that you know, and it's funny because we've been just saying how, oh, government needs to step in. Facebook, FaceTime's bug will be investigated by the New York Attorney General Letitia James and Governor Andrew Cuomo. We just were saying, oh,
I know. Yeah. Well, we do because yeah.
But your reaction is exactly right. Oh, God.
Well, no, because we need literacy, right? Like, I think to George's initial point, which is that we need more literacy across, you know, legislators about tech. We need better tech literacy.
Well, I think with
they investigate the right things.
People like Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez and other new young legislators coming in and more all the time. I mean, it's to see her use social media, she gets it. She understands. Mm-hmm. I think we need more people like her.
But she's one of the few. We need, a lot more.
Well, we will. I think this is a process. My other issue, I think government's never been designed to move as fast as industry. That's intentional.
Sure. Absolutely.
What the worst thing in the world would be a super efficient government. Right? The founders knew that. That's why we have 3 competing branches. There's oversight. I mean, it's intentionally deliberate. Mm-hmm. Which means it's a little bit of a mismatch to a very fast-moving world. Not just, by the way, not just info tech, but get ready for the genetic revolution.
Yeah. It's going to be rough.
Yeah. I mean, if you think they don't understand, you know, bits and bytes, wait till it gets to DNA and CRISPR.
And by the way, in that respect, I know we roll our eyes when we see, you know, government investigating something like this. This was still a serious flaw.
Yeah.
I still think it's worth the New York State taking a look at this and just being like, doing the rundown, seeing how this happened and how Apple didn't notice. I have no problem with that. We should be doing this for every security flaw, for every data breach. I'm still like reeling. What was the widespread one that was shutting down WannaCry? Like after all the WannaCry stuff too, which revealed that hospitals across the UK just had bad IT and that left them vulnerable to a lot of this. Like, Those are problems we could fix. Like those are like, well, that's what I'm saying. I don't think like regulation is the fix for everything, but I think like ensuring that a company is keeping their software up to date, you know, is securely patched as much as an OS maker has available. Like I think that sort of thing should be standardized, and if somebody isn't following that, should be punished for it. Because otherwise, yeah, you have critical systems like hospitals that could go down because somebody forgot a Windows update.
Did you see, this was actually, it's old news, but I just saw it. Mondelez, which was bit by Petya, the big food company, had insurance with Zurich. Zurich said, Oh, no, not Petya, the ransomware, was an act of war. You're not covered. You're not covered. Mondelez is suing Zurich Insurance Group for $100 million in damages. It is an act of war, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it was launched against, the world by national actors. Of course, the technology came from the NSA.
Secure your system, everyone.
Wow. That'll be an interesting lawsuit to follow. Speaking of court actions, on Friday, oral arguments, very important oral arguments, in a lawsuit challenging the repeal of net neutrality. The United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit is hearing these arguments. The plaintiffs in the suit, led by Mozilla, yay Mozilla, you go Mozilla.
For real.
And supported by 22 state attorneys general, say the FCC lacked a sound legal reason for scrapping the Title II regulations. The government will argue, it's expected, according to the New York Times, that the rules were repealed because of the burden they imposed on broadband providers like Verizon and Comcast. I'd be very interesting to hear the arguments and see what happens. This is not going to be a quick battle. This will go for years, no doubt.
I think, like, with by the way, like 5G is kind of a bigger thing. Like all the Huawei stuff right now is centered mm-hmm. around 5G and 5G infrastructure. And I think now that this conversation is happening in the government, maybe more people are paying attention to what this future infrastructure is and what it means and where it comes from. Maybe now they'll pay more attention to net neutrality and what that means too.
Let's talk about Huawei, because the news is bad. The United States has continued to prosecute the Huawei vice president, who's currently in Canada, but is being held to for extradition for spying. There's a Polish Huawei executive who's been arrested in Poland for spying. Huawei, which is a Chinese maker of, it's the number two, although it goes back and forth with Apple. I think they're number three mm-hmm. this week, manufacturer of smartphones after Samsung. So it's Samsung, Apple, Huawei. Sometimes Apple is third, sometimes second. So they're this is a big Chinese company founded by a former member of the Chinese military. And the government, the U.S. government, is saying, has already told two of the big U.S. carriers, I think Verizon and AT&T, they may not mm-hmm. use Huawei gear in their 5G network. What? I find this fascinating. This is a very difficult challenge because no one else is making 5G gear as good as Huawei, as well as Huawei, as inexpensively as Huawei.
Mm-hmm. That's why we need that competition. But like, this cuts deep, right? This cuts back to the cyber Cold War we've been having mm-hmm. with China and a lot of other countries for the past decade. You know, this goes way, way back. And I think the main worry now with Huawei is that, is this just another arm of the Chinese government trying to just have its tendrils there, maybe not actually doing anything, but having the capability to read data if they wanted to, or have a certain amount of knowledge around what's happening around the world. That's it's a legit fear.
I was skeptical. I wasn't clear, because I like Huawei gear, to be honest.
It's nice. I have a Huawei laptop that I really
that like. Mate 20 Pro is great. Awesome. The Mate Pro, yeah. Yeah. I love their phones. So I was a little, I thought maybe they're a victim in the U.S.-Chinese trade war. But now my mind has a little bit been changed. The U.S. unsealed the indictments against the Huawei chief financial officer who's being held in Canada, Meng Wanzhou. And among the accusations, prosecutors say Huawei stole trade secrets, including technology behind a robotic device T-Mobile used to test smartphones, Tappy. Huawei engineers secretly took photos of the robot, measured it, and tried to steal a piece of it from the lab. Okay, well, maybe. There is no allegation in the unsealed documents that Huawei is working at the behest of the Chinese government.
Right. However, I mean, this was interesting, is that this is slightly different than some of the ZTE scandals, mm-hmm. you know, where there was, you know, ZTE, which is another Chinese manufacturer, and they're often conflated with Huawei because they make similar things and have had similar accusations against them.
The U.S. Department of Commerce banned both ZTE and Huawei. So.
Right, exactly. But in ZTE's case, I think there was actually some like direct allegations to saying that their network equipment was spying or could potentially be spying. Whereas this seems to be more about like, are they, you know, capturing secrets or this or that. What's actually interesting, and it hasn't had as much traction, but I work with a number of Canadians who used to work, who've worked in the Canadian telecom industry for a long time. And what's sort of kind of an interesting wrinkle to, you know, the whole fact that the arrest happened in Canada is that a lot of people from the Nortel days in Canada are angry about what they, you know, perceive of Huawei's role in the downturn of the fall of Nortel. So,
interesting. Australia has banned Huawei gear from its 5G rollout. The Department of Defense bans both Huawei and ZTE from U.S. military bases.
Mm-hmm.
British Telecom says they're going to strip Huawei equipment from its 4G network by 2021 and won't use it in 5G core. But see, this is the issue. It's everywhere.
Right, exactly. It's like, well, who do you go to? I guess like you have Ericsson, but who else? And you have Intel maybe, but like who else do you have who even makes some of this stuff? I'm not as familiar. Devendra, do you know? Because I
Nokia,
know Ericsson.
Nokia and Ericsson are two big,
yeah.
Two big providers. Of course, they're in Scandinavia, so maybe... Mm-hmm. Maybe the Finns like us. I don't know.
And this year at CES, Intel was saying, we want to be everywhere. We want to be in all the pieces because they missed out on mobile completely, right?
By not powering
the iPhone. So I think right now Intel's like, we don't want that to happen ever again. So there's going to be a big push by Intel. Who knows how well that works out, but they've been pushing like modems. They've been doing LTE modems, and that's worked out well for them so far.
Qualcomm has reached a licensing agreement with Huawei a couple of days ago.
Interesting. But I guess this is my question. Like, how much of this do we think is there any sort of, like, xenophobia involved in
yeah,
this?
Yeah, Tappy, mm-hmm. taking pictures of Tappy, the T-Mobile robot, doesn't sound like cyber espionage.
But it was because they were talking about either purchasing it or licensing it, and it's... That is what stealing is, right? Like they took that idea, they took photos, they stole that tech.
Companies do that. I mean, it's wrong.
It's wrong.
Illegal.
Yeah.
But it is not a national security threat. Is it? I don't think it is.
Well, it's because it's a Chinese company doing that to a U.S. company. And I think there are a lot of reports about U.S. companies like visiting and trying to partner with some Chinese companies. All of a sudden, their tech, there were some really good, I think it was like All Things Considered had a good chat with some folks.
I listened
about
to that. There's a guy who wrote a book about this, and it was interesting. Look, it's clear what the threats could be. If you have, if your network is built on network infrastructure is built on gear from a company controlled by the government of China, and it doesn't even have to be currently controlled because it is a Chinese company. At some point, the government could say, "Okay, fine, thank you, we'll take over from here," or "We'd like access to that network." So that's legitimate. There's both industrial espionage threats and national security threats because if we start to rely on 5G infrastructure, our entire autonomous fleet is using 5G to communicate, and all of a sudden the Chinese government flips a switch and it stops working. That's not good.
Sure.
That's cyber war.
It isn't. There's a lot of pressure on Canada to ban Huawei.
Canada has, haven't? Oh, they haven't
yet.
Okay.
They have not. There's a lot of pressure on them too. Because, you know, again, there's a lot of, like the big five are kind of looking at us as well, because if our infrastructure has Huawei, like you go through us to be able to get information anyways. So that kind of compromises everyone else to be able to deal with it. But, you know, Huawei's already said like they deny that they're spying for the Chinese government or that they are using their technology for spying in any way. They didn't say that they couldn't. That they wouldn't, which is like also they were not really strong in their statements to that. And in Canada, they're still looking into it and they're going to make a decision dependent on what they find for security. Like we're lucky Trudeau actually has a good knowledge of technology and how it's used. And he did hire a whole bunch of people that work in the government that really are in the field, like the agriculture minister actually works in agriculture. So we're hoping that we'll actually get some good answers to that.
Nice humble brag, Georgia. Very nice.
Yeah, seriously. Congratulations.
So it's great for you.
The officials actually know what they're doing. Congrats.
Yeah, show off. So the person that was on Fresh Air is named David Sanger. He's a tech security correspondent for the New York Times and has written a book about cyber warfare called The Perfect Weapon. So his point, which was kind of interesting, is that these switches that Huawei is selling are basically not hardware. They're software. Mm-hmm. So if in the old days when switches were hardware, a company could buy them and presumably inspect them in such a way to make sure that they were safe. But the problem is it's software. Not only is it software, it's software that's updated fairly regularly. So yeah. there's no way to mm-hmm. be sure that that software at some point won't be modified in such a way that it could be dangerous. There's just yeah. no way
and
to
how
guarantee
how do you put that. Any safeguards in place to be able to deal with that?
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not hardware. It's important to understand. It's not just
right.
that don't put that hardware in there. It's the software that's the real concern.
And I don't disagree with that. I mean, I think that's a valid concern. I guess the only thing I would push back on is you could make that claim about any provider, right?
Well, that's right.
Right.
I mean,
so
you know,
a little bit of it is probably because it's China versus
yes.
the U.S. got caught doing exactly the same thing. They were a big enough company. They might get a pass on it.
Right.
Right. And it, which I guess is kind of my point, which is that I don't doubt that there yeah. are real concerns. I just yeah. wonder in some cases how much there is a xenophobic component and an anti-China component
exactly.
that may not be warranted. And that bothers me
exactly.
if I'm being totally like, yeah, mm-hmm. like that bothers me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's where my unease comes from. Exactly. Christina, is this a product of xenophobia and trade war or is I mean, there certainly is legitimate root cause for concern. I don't know. Is Ericsson? I guess Ericsson. We can trust them because they're not from
right.
China.
That's what I'm saying. Well, but right. See, that's the thing. It's like, are we putting the same scrutiny against right. Ericsson, against Nokia, and against others that we're doing here? I think we should. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, I think yeah. that we should. But if we're not, then we need to start. We need to discuss and have a real conversation about why. And when we're talking about holding people and you know arresting people in different countries and extraditing them, you know. Again, like you need to have, in my opinion, very, very good reasons for that, you know?
All right, let's take a little break. We've lots more to talk about, including a DNA company giving its data to the FBI. But first, a word from, so as long as we're talking cybersecurity, Sophos. We use Sophos here. Everybody loves Sophos. Many is the time I've told people, use Sophos' online scanner to check your system. Sophos understands that it is a battle between the black hats and us, and it is a seesaw battle, and the hackers are getting smarter all the time. That's why Sophos Cybersecurity uses machine learning. They call it deep learning to interpret data and respond to threats better than any network protection can. Hardware and software, Sophos recently ranked number one by an independent security test done by SE Labs with the best protection ratings across the board, both for large enterprises and small businesses. It's why we use Sophos here. They have actually now done something kind of interesting, and I've been using it, and I find it very, very fascinating. They took the same deep learning software technology they're using in these big enterprises now, and they've made a premium version available for home users for Mac and PC. It's called Sophos Home. And it's not an antivirus. It's something so much more sophisticated. It delivers real-time protection from the latest ransomware attacks, malicious software, hacking attempts, and more. Very easy to use, always up to date. It's the first time I've ever seen anything that's faster than the bad guys. It's up to date faster than the bad guys, and because it's cloud-based. And, oh, I love this feature, and I know some of you are responsible for family and friends and their security. It's a cloud-based protection you can use to keep your relatives secure no matter where they are, even if they're thousands of miles away. You can remotely manage their security, clean up threats, keep them safe. One account can protect all the Macs and PCs in your home and your family, too. It's easy to use, whether you're just securing a single laptop or managing the security of multiple devices around the world, because that's Sophos. That's how they work in enterprise, and that's how they work with Sophos Home. Sophos tagline is security made simple, and that's exactly what you're gonna get. You work with your browser. There's no, you know, it's a browser interface, so you start securing your systems right now. Whether you're a large enterprise or a home user, Sophos, SOPHOS, has you covered. Some of the largest businesses in the world use Sophos to protect their systems from ransomware. Third-party reviewers consistently rank Sophos among the best cybersecurity providers. And I love it that synchronized security means you manage all your Sophos products from a single cloud-based console for your family as well as for yourself. Get a free trial right now of Sophos Home at Sophos.com. Actually, you can also go there and get that security scan, too. And we've always recommended that as a great way of making sure your system is up to date and safe. Sophos.com. Great product. So we're gonna have to tease the facts out on this one because it's not clear. You may remember the Golden State Killer case, which was a long, cold case, serial killer, never caught him, until the feds went to a database, a DNA genetic database run by Family Tree DNA. Now, at the time, this didn't bother me when I read about this, because what had happened was relatives of the guy they eventually arrested, but this happened fairly recently, had posted, they'd had DNA tests done, posted their data on the forum in an attempt to find other family members. The feds apparently were scanning through the forum. They had the DNA of the Golden State Killer. They just didn't have a suspect. They noticed the similarity, and they actually were able to track down the relatives, say, tell us about other people in your family, and they actually arrested the guy, which is remarkable. It's Portland police. This is a 40-year-old case. So, they arrested him. This was in April. But what we've now learned since is something more disturbing. See, that didn't bother me. That was voluntary, right? People put their DNA information up. So, you're putting it public. You know, the FBI uses it. That's fine. What we're finding now is Family Tree DNA is also providing this access to people who haven't posted it publicly.
Mm-hmm.
The company, which was one of the first, I think they say they were the first to offer a direct consumer test kit, told BuzzFeed News on Thursday that they have a relationship with the FBI, that they will help law enforcement agencies solve violent crimes faster than ever. Not a contract, but, and this is the thing that is disturbing, the firm has agreed to test DNA samples, upload the profiles to its database on a case-by-case basis. They've been doing it since the fall. And they say that, you know, the only way to stop this, if you are a Family Tree DNA customer, is to turn off family sharing. That by saying, I want to find other relatives, you are giving them permission to share this information with law enforcement. Of course, if you're doing Family Tree DNA, that's the entire point of it.
Right.
Finding possible relatives through DNA testing. So Family Tree says if you opt out of any familial matching, notice no FBI in there, any familial matching, then the FBI won't be able to search your files. But if you say, oh, yeah, I'm looking for family members, that also means the FBI can look through your stuff. What do you think?
I think this is yet another reason why no one should give these things. No one should give these things as gifts, you know, like every year. People are like, oh,
sorry, that is true. Give you
a 23andMe.
First of all, 23andMe is a sponsor. But that's not going to keep me from saying this. But I think there's a lot of value in this direct to consumer DNA testing. Right. But you should only do it with a company that says explicitly, no one's going to get this information except you.
But the problem, and Alex in the chat room actually mentioned it, is that these companies don't cover any HIPAA kind of covered entities. And so mm-hmm. you don't have the same kind of legal protection. And even if they say they're not going to cover it, if you know, the FBI comes after them and says, listen, we want this information. We know for some reason this person's come to you. It becomes one of these really big issues to that. And I think that Christine is absolutely right. Like, you give this as a gift to someone else, it might not be that much of a gift unless you think they've committed a crime that makes you want to send it on purpose.
Mea culpa, but I have my entire family, my wife, my kids, my mother, my father, my wife's mother and father have all done, I think most of us did 23andMe. I've done 23andMe and Helix, both of which were sponsors. Actually, 23andMe is still a sponsor on the radio show. You know, I've done it. I like the stuff I get from it. So what do we need? Some sort of HIPAA? Do we need?
Yes.
What do we need?
Yeah, we need a lot more, yes. More than what we have.
All right, and let me play devil's advocate. Look, if you didn't do anything wrong.
Oh, please. Oh, my God.
This is how the national database of DNA starts.
Yeah, this could be used like for like insurance companies, and we can talk about insurance companies.
Well, that's different. I agree.
This could be used against you in many different ways versus the benefits. And you heard about the twins. Two twins ended up doing their DNA for their genetic ancestry. And they only test 1% of the bloody DNA. So they ended up getting ancestry of like being in two different parts. And they are identical twins. So their DNA is identical. And they got two completely divergent.
There's a lot. That CBC story was kind of BS. I want to say before you go on. That CBC story was BS. It was statistically exactly in line with what you'd expect. But what people don't understand is that these DNA tests are not, in fact, testing every strand and comparing head to head. What they do is they take your DNA and they compare it to a statistical sample. And within that limitation, this is exactly
But again, correct. That shows how.
But people need to understand that. Yeah. But I understand.
It's not really giving you what you think that you're getting from that. They're hoping to find out where they were trying to find out where their ancestry was from, and this is at 1% of your DNA. It's like truly nothing. So you end up with an idea that is inaccurate for what you're getting, and you're giving up your DNA.
Yeah, and I would say that even if that, you know, because I think that. The stuff will get better, and even if you were to put that aside.
If you look, I mean, this is the CBC story, and you look at the statistical results that they got, they're pretty damn close. There's some little, I mean, it's nitpicky. But I think if people think, oh, no, this is an exact science, they're going to be disappointed by the results. But it's not. It's a statistical database.
The bigger thing is creating a database of people's DNA. Like, that, to me, is the bigger
thing. So that's, okay, right. So, yes. But no, I think what George is saying, and I respect that, is you're not getting that much and you're giving up everything.
Yes. Right. Yes.
And I think it should also be pointed out that when we've shown this has happened before where it's not about you have nothing to hide. It's that, you know, DNA can be transferred across things. People have found DNA where people have never been in locations before. And now all of a sudden you have a database of individuals and you can have people framed or convicted of crimes.
I wouldn't be able to get if I had the APOE gene, which is a marker, not by the way. And this is the other problem with this. People often say, well, you got APOE there. You're going to get Alzheimer's. No. But that is there is a statistical relationship between that marker and Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. If an insurer then said, well, for what? I don't care. I'm not going to give you long-term care insurance.
Exactly.
That would be bad.
Totally. And I mean, this is where this all starts. So, I mean, to me, it's hugely problematic.
On the other hand, the insurance companies say, yes, but by doing so, we're reducing the cost of insurance for all of you.
Oh, please.
That's the same thing that the insurance companies say about like
years.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. They lie. They're just saying that because they want the information to it. And insurance companies are not there to help you out. I'm sorry. They're there to make profit. And so the more people they can say no to, the nice people get fired from insurance companies. And the more people that they can say no to, they actually have a quota to that. Then that's how they move up in the company. So on using it on your watch, they're like, you know what, if you're healthy and doing all of these things, you'll have less chance of needing to use the insurance company, which is true. But you end up finding out you have some sort of arrhythmia, and they find out they could also say, you know what, actually now that's no longer covered.
But thanks to Family Tree DNA, this guy who killed 13 people, raped more than 50 people, committed over 100 burglaries 40 years ago, has finally been caught.
You know, that doesn't fly with me because there is a backlog of rape kits that are out there that have never been looked at, where they have all of the DNA there that the government could test and they choose not to. So when you get through all of those for murders and for rape and other violent crimes, then you can talk to me about needing to go to.
Maybe that's what the FBI is doing. Maybe they're using. Maybe they're going through those old rape kits and going through the database, the Family Tree DNA database, just to see what they could find. Would that be bad?
Yes. Okay. Yes, because it's bad for the greater good to that. We still need to have privacy is still important to everyone. And yes, it feels good to be able to say, well, you know, we've stopped this one bad guy, right. But it should not be at the cost of the many.
And at this point, you'd probably be wise to consider whether you want to do one of these, right?
Indeed. But it's basically the minority report problem, right? Like, here's a perfect system mm-hmm. for predicting crime, exactly. except mm-hmm. how can this be used badly?
Yeah.
And I love that movie because by the end, the solution is like, oh, I guess we kind of have to let crime happen again. I don't know. Like, there's no easy answer, but we need to have educated, smart people within these fields to really start asking these questions now because, we're seeing all this building up.
At the very least, I think you need to have regulations. Like I'll roll my eyes about, you know, the state of New York looking into the FaceTime bug. Mm-hmm. But this is the sort of thing where you need HIPAA, where you need other sorts of regulations. Mm-hmm. It needs to be done very seriously because you're potentially talking about, yes, you could maybe catch a killer, which is great, but you could also conceivably ruin people's lives.
Right.
And someone could be, you know, put in jail for something that they didn't do. And that's not a far out thought. You know, the implications here are really, really dangerous.
It's not just DNA. I mean, face recognition technology, absolutely. We know, has a high rate mm-hmm. of false positives.
Exactly. And we already have, you know, databases for things like that. I mean, I feel annoyed enough with myself that I use Clear, the service to get through airport security.
They've got your iris.
I know. They have my iris and my fingerprints. And I'm mad at myself. But mm-hmm. But I'm in airports so often that, you know, and I also have global entry. So, you know, I'm already in a database. But it's, you know, just one other thing where you do worry about, okay, this is a private sector thing controlling these things. And governments are using this to track things back and forth. And it's bothersome.
There's huge benefit to DNA testing.
Women
who have the BRCA gene, mm-hmm. for instance, mm-hmm. that can be very, if done properly. By the way, the BRCA tests, by most of these consumer DNA tests are not very useful. But if you went to your physician, got a prescription and got a real BRCA genetic test, that is hugely valuable information. It's at that point protected by HIPAA. So I think the key is to extend the privacy protections of HIPAA to these DNA tests.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Yeah. Why not? It just makes life a lot harder for these companies, but it should harder for these companies.
Because the companies don't want to and they don't have to. They're making a lot of money by not having to do it. It's expensive.
Remember, the FDA went to 23andMe and said, you can't make that. You cannot make these health recommendations. Right. Shut down 23andMe. They went through a long process, went back and forth. 23andMe got at the point where the FDA said, okay, we'll now give you approval, and they do have approval for it.
Yes. Which
Why
I think
can't
is great.
That happen? That should happen.
I think that should. I think that should be the requirement. I mean, I think you pointed out, I mean, I think both Devendra and Georgia said, like, the reason this doesn't happen is because by making them be responsible for HIPAA requirements, and they would have to be, you know, classified as a medical.
They should be.
I agree.
Because I don't want people not to do DNA testing because they're worried the FBI is going to arrest their cousin.
I agree with you. I agree with you. What I'm saying though is that makes it harder for these startups and these companies to scale. But I think 23andMe, I think that's a great point. Is that they, you know, were faced with that critique, and rather than shutting down, they went through the hoops. And I almost feel like if you're in this space, look, it's great. Disruption is great, but you need to follow the same rules that any other medical company would follow. And it just simply saying, well, we're tech, we can break things. I mean, that's how
Apple got approval for their ECG.
Yes, they did.
According to a new FDA regulation system that allow precisely for high speed approval of technological devices, it's not been proven safe and effective, but it used this special regulation.
I'm also thinking of like Theranos too. Like it's they didn't go through the FDA. I think there was like a loophole where they didn't have to. So. Yep. Yeah, these are all things we need to fix because they could have been a really interesting company, but we could have also stopped them much earlier if somebody just took a look at their tech and was like, hey,
well, it could have been an interesting company if it wasn't all a lie, but
yeah.
It would be interesting. It would have had to not have been a complete lie from the beginning, but the idea was certainly interesting.
It is and interesting even, that because the FDA overhauled this process for medical devices because of Apple mm-hmm. and because of demand and made it easier. So there's been this demand to do that mm-hmm. so that we can do this because tech moves fast and we don't want these slow, expensive processes to hold us back. But then there's the other side of it. Well, there's a good reason for this to be slow and expensive.
Yeah. The only problem is even once, you know, if they get covered by HIPAA, like think about a data breach for your DNA, right? You can change your credit card numbers and your passwords. You can't change your DNA. And once that's out there and it's known fact, then insurance companies can say it's a known fact and it's no fault of your own and it's been covered by anything. So even with that, there's still a discussion to be made.
Yeah, I tried to do, they actually didn't accept me, but some years back there was a project that was started in 2005, the Personal Genome Project, which I think was a great benefit to mankind. I think it was out of Harvard.
Yeah,
and
no,
I applied for this. You had to pay like $1,500 because this is back when DNA testing was very expensive. And what they said at the time was, look, we're going to collect all your DNA. We're going to actually, you're going to fill out long questionnaires about your medical history, your health history, your family health history. And we do not promise to keep this private. In fact, we're going to identify it with your name because we know we can't keep it private. People like Esther Dyson who did this said, yeah, this is good. And I said, yeah, fine, have my name. They never made a promise of privacy because they said that's going to be impossible. It will get out. So participants are invited to publicly share the genomic and trait data in an integrated, publicly accessible format. But you have to sign a fairly significant waiver. It's not anonymous. The risks of participant re-identification are addressed up front as an integral part of the consent and enrollment process. Neither anonymity nor confidentiality of data is promised, period. And actually, I would have been happy to be accepted. I don't know why they didn't take me, but... that's the difference. That by doing that, Esther Dyson and the people who've done it are giving to society.
And totally, and it's upfront about it, right? Like I think that's completely different. That's a completely different thing to me than saying we're going to connect you with family members.
Yeah,
but we're not going to let you know about these other things that might happen.
FBI, we don't know anything about that. Yeah. As long as your blood pressure is up, let's get it up a little higher. Japanese government has said it's going to hack citizens' IoT devices to secure them before the Olympics. Japanese government approved a law on Friday that would allow government workers to hack into people's IoT devices. They're trying to survey them to see if you're using default passwords, to find out if you're secure, if you've got something like the VPN filter on your router, that kind of thing. The Japanese government's decision, according to ZDNet, to log into users' IoT devices has sparked outrage in Japan. Many have argued it's an unnecessary step. However, the government plan does have its technical merits. Because, after all, IoT devices and routers particularly are notoriously insecure.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I'm surprised this is something ISPs aren't doing already, too. Like, in a certain way. Like, hey, by the way, you have this thing on your system. They may do like a system-wide ping to just look for default usernames and passwords. I think that's a pretty simple, harmless
thing.
That's
what they're going to do. The National Institute of Information Communications Technology will be allowed to use default passwords and password dictionaries to attack.
Mm-hmm. And that's interesting, password dictionaries. Yeah. But, you know, it's like I would not mind if ISPs were doing this because it would help a lot of consumers who aren't super technically savvy. And there's like less of a problem for them. There is certainly the worry, though, that all of a sudden you'll have these ISP specialists who know they can get into certain systems and who knows what happens there.
Yeah, the idea here is they're going to make a list of devices that use the default passwords or monkey123. They send that to the internet service provider who then contacts the customer and says, fix your device.
Yeah.
The Olympics are coming. What are you, crazy?
I mean,
you could do
this
in Japan. That's a very different kind of society. You do this in the United States. Insane. Mm-hmm.
It'd be insane. Also, what I think the problem in the United States is that in many cases, the router is actually provided by the ISP. Right.
Yes.
Like a lot of these in-home devices, a lot of these things are actually controlled by the ISPs, which to me does kind of open up the idea of, to Vinder's point, I mean, maybe they should be doing some of these scans, or maybe we should just, as consumers or as people, like, require that these things ship with better defaults. I don't know.
That'd be good.
But I understand both concerns, but I mean, I guess I understand both sides. I think this could potentially be a good thing if you could actually enforce this. But I also, like, you're right, this wouldn't work in the US, A, the outrage, and B, the reality is that most people are getting their insecure router with their password or whatever from their internet provider. Or in some cases, you know, now you're seeing apartment complexes who are, you know, forcing people to install smart locks that could be hacked and have other things. It's like, what do you do in those cases, you know, where some of your IoT things that might be insecure have been provided to you, or you're forced to use them because they come as part of something else that you didn't even knowingly put in your home, you know?
San Francisco Board of Supervisors has proposed an ordinance, the Stop Secret Surveillance Ordinance, that would make the city the first in the nation to ban government use of facial recognition. It's got to be approved by the board. Good idea. I mean, we know, for instance, we know Taylor Swift, your beloved Tay-Tay.
I know.
Has used facial recognition at her concerts to keep stalkers at bay.
Yeah. And I mean, the interesting thing there, I mean, like, do I love that? No. I also feel like it's a private event, so you have the ability to do those things.
And I want Tay-Tay to be safe.
Same, but I like, I couldn't get as outraged about that just because it is in a private place and it is not one of those instances where you're in the public and they're, you know, doing this. Like, do I understand why people are creeped out? Yeah. At the same time, I also understand why, like, when someone has legitimate stalkers, you know, why they might do something like that. You can be concerned about what happens with where those databases are being stored and that sort of thing. But again, you're entering a private event.
I bet you at the Super Bowl they are using face recognition.
Of course they are. And they're probably doing it at all kinds of things,
right? Like Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Yeah.
I'm actually more bothered about it in public spaces, if I'm being totally honest. Like, I don't really feel like you necessarily have an expectation of privacy going to, like, some of these
you don't really have an expectation of privacy in a public space either. So it kind of leaves you with nowhere that
Here's
you really have an expectation of privacy.
A lot of the face recognition a lot of the face recognition software has been trained on white people, and is notoriously bad with people of color, which means a disproportionate number of false positives for people of color. So if you're African American, you're more likely to get stopped, detained, maybe even arrested for a false positive. And I don't care if it's public or private. That's not good.
I agree.
We tend to build these systems and think they're magic and kind of overlook these flaws. Yeah. And that's I think that's the main worry. Like, I have a lot of issues about facial recognition in general, but it's the false positives where, and it's sort of like DNA testing too, right? For police, there are certainly issues with it, but I think in a certain sense, we tend to rely on it a lot, and that could lead to other sorts of issues.
Let's take a little break. Devendra Hardwar, he's here from Engadget, senior editor over there.
Yes, yes.
We love having you on every day, every time. Congratulations, I understand. How old is your newborn now?
Oh, Sophia is 3.5 months old.
Yikes.
And
how's it
I'm
going?
Beginning the second. It's going good. Like, she's sleeping better.
Yeah.
We're surviving.
Oh,
yeah.
The sleep thing is a big one.
Good for you.
That's the huge thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm starting the second half of my paternity leave this month. So I just have February just to hang out with the baby.
Oh, that's so great.
Bonding time.
I was very fortunate that I got semi-fired when our first baby was born, and I only had to work a few days a week. And it was so much fun. I was the only daddy at Gymboree. I would go to mommy groups with Abby. It was so great. It's the best thing ever. I wish I could afford to just quit. I would have.
Come to Canada. We have 1 year maternity. We take care of you. You can
again,
stay
Georgia.
Home and get paid. This one,
Georgia.
This one, you gotta say. This one, I'm not even.
They're all benefits. They're, like, day child care as well. Like, once you start working again, like, every other country has it better than the U.S. So,
you know, this is completely off topic, but this whole debate now about Medicare for all and something a number of Democratic candidates are proposing, and then the response from people like Howard Schultz, the CEO of Starbucks, who's running, and Michael Bloomberg, that, oh, we can't afford that. But then I wonder, but Canada can. In fact, every developed nation in the world except the U.S. can afford it.
It's actually cheaper for you in the long run. So I think it's just people grab hold of a political thing. I think taking care of all of your people is really important. This shouldn't even be about politics when it comes to people's health. Your country is deemed on how you take care of the people that are the sickest, the weakest, the most needy to that. And it's you know that it's actually more affordable because the more that you access healthcare earlier, the less chance that something big and expensive actually comes down the road to it. And then the more that you can stay into the workforce, the more that you contribute, the more taxes that you can pay. So I think that it's workable, and I don't think that it should be a political issue. I think that everyone should be able to not have to think about if they have to take care of their sick child or pay the mortgage payment to that.
It's terrible. And medical bankruptcy, this is the only country in the world where medical bankruptcy is prevalent, and it shouldn't. That shouldn't happen. And yet, I also doubt very much we'll ever get single payer health care in the United States. It doesn't seem possible.
Slowly but surely, hopefully.
Maybe. I think you're gonna definitely get it. Yeah, you're the only developed nation.
We're the last one.
Does not have it. You for sure. This is gonna happen. I think everyone can get on board with that.
Yeah. Hey, we have a new show we're launching on Twit. Yeah.
What's that?
It's hot. Watch.
This is Twit.
Hey, everybody. It's the brand new Twit show, Hands on Tech. I'm Leo Laporte.
I'm Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Oh, we're all here. You see, it turns out at Twit, we get a lot of gear. Always get a lot of gear to review. Laptops, phones, VR gear, stuff like
robots.
This thing.
And so we thought it'd be fun, whatever that is. You don't even know, do you?
No.
So we thought it'd be fun to take some of the stuff we get and give you reviews. But instead of doing a regular review show, we're just going to review everything when it comes in. They might be short reviews. They might be long reviews. But it'll always be a number of different reviews every week. So if you subscribe to the Hands on Tech channel, you'll get the latest reviews. And then you can always Google your favorite product, find out what we think of it. The best way to get ready for Hands on Tech, episode one's coming soon. In fact, it's going to be a review of the new Jaguar I-Pace electric vehicle, is to go to twit.tv/hot. That stands for Hands on Tech. Is that robot?
Yeah, it's burping at me. I'm sorry.
We'll see you soon on Hands on Tech. Bye-bye. twit.tv/hot if you'd like to subscribe. It'll be on YouTube as well. Our show today brought
to
you.
That looks great.
That's going to be fun. You know, we realized
we've
got all this stuff. We review them on our individual shows. Why not just make it possible to get just the reviews? Just
the reviews. Megan's on it. So
and we always love that. And actually, anybody who wants to do a review, I mean, you're already doing it for Engadget, Avindra, but Christina or
Georgia, I miss reviews.
Let us know. We'll send you the product. You can review it. We got a lot of stuff. Far too much stuff for us to review. I just sent Odoc to the little handheld Osmo. I mean, how many people are reviewing products at Engadget? Probably a dozen, right?
It's crazy.
It's
but
endless.
Honestly, our reviews may also sync up. So let me know. We'll probably just get it and we can do just
they will sync up. Because honestly, there's a difference between a review in print where you can read the specs. And I really like those. Mm-hmm. Versus the kind of review we do, which is more like, well, here's what it's like to use it. Here's what it looks like. Here's how it feels.
Nice to see it.
It's what people want to see right now, too. Like, I'm feeling the pressure of, like, doing a really strict traditional review video. It's very different. Meanwhile, everyone on YouTube is just doing, like, hey, let's look at this cool thing and really informal. It seems like the way people want to consume the stuff now, too. Yeah.
We just announced the show today. We have over 40,000 subscribers on YouTube already.
Nice.
So. Wow. That's awesome. Congrats.
It's hot.
Yeah, it's hot.
Hands on tech. Like the acronym, though. Feeling up tech would have been good too, but
the acronym for feeling up tech is FUT. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not as catchy. It's not as catchy, but cuter, but not as catchy.
We will be feeling our tech up on hot. This week in tech brought to you by Quip. Actually, this is a hot device. Lisa and I just went to Vegas and we brought our Quips. So I love an electric toothbrush, but the Quip is the best electric toothbrush ever. By the way, the first subscription electric toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association. So that's a pretty nice thing. Brushing right, of course, is very important. The Quip is a great, affordable electric toothbrush that's an effective clean. It's gentle on your sensitive gums. It's in fact, sometimes people go, oh, it's too gentle. That was my first reaction. It turned out I've been brushing too hard. My dentist said, no, please use the Quip because it's just right. You get a built-in two-minute timer, which pulses every 30 seconds to remind you when to switch sides and help you clean your whole mouth evenly. Everybody around here started to use the Quip. Debbie started using it. Her dentist said, I don't know what you're doing, but keep up the good work. It's because most of us don't brush for a full 2 minutes or clean evenly. And I love the Quip. It's great for travel because it's got a AAA battery in it. There's no charger. So I just pop the Quip in my suitcase, and I'm good to go. It's great at home, too, because you see that little Quip holder? It sticks right on the mirror, so you'll never forget the brush. It's staring you right in the face when you go into the bathroom. It works as a stand, or you can mount it to mirrors. You can slide over your bristles to pack. You turn it in upside down, and so it's perfect. It's got everything it needs to pack. And what's great about the Quip is you automatically get new brush heads, new batteries delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule. Every 3 months, just $5. And a friendly reminder when it's time for a refresh so you'll stay committed to your oral health. Most of us, whether using electric or regular toothbrushes, about 75% of us use brushes that are worn out. They are no longer effective. Quip is the way to do it. One of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association, backed by over 25,000 dental professionals, thousands of verified five-star reviews, and a lot of people at Twit who are happy to use it. 1 million happy, healthy mouths. Quip. Oh, did I mention it starts at $25? Go to getquip.com/twit right now. Get your first refill pack for free when you purchase any Quip electric toothbrush. I got his and her toothbrushes. I'm copper. She's gold. So we know the difference, and we love them. Get your first refill pack free at getquip.com/twit. GETQUIP.com/twit.
We love Quip.
Let's see. I jumped. Sometimes this happens. I jumped to an earlier episode, and I have all the old stories. But here's one that gave me a little... You're all podcasters, so maybe this will give you a little thrill. Spotify, according to Recode, is in talks to buy Gimlet Media for $200 million!
Wow.
Wow, wow, wow.
What? Okay, so Gimlet is started right with Alex... Was it Blumfeld who was...
Blumberg.
Blumberg. And it was all about, I'm going to raise money to do Podcast Network, right?
Startup. Yeah.
And they had a few other shows, including one called Homecoming, that they then sold the rights to Netflix, and it's become a widely beloved TV show, and Netflix won a Golden... Didn't it win a Golden Globe? It certainly was nominated. It was a scripted podcast, which they turned into... Amazon Netflix, not Netflix. Yes, Amazon TV. I watched the first three episodes. I can't... Is it worth continuing?
I hear it's very good. I also, like, watched the first episode, was kind of on it, but I hear it's great.
So. It's slow. So Gimlet did raise money, startup, in 2017. A funding round valued the company at about $70 million, which even then blows my mind for a podcast network. But according to Recode, a person familiar with the deal says Spotify will pay more than $200 million cash for the company. And the reason it's worth so much to Spotify, I think, is pretty clear. Any company like Spotify that's kind of at the mercy of the record industry is desperately looking for another place for content, right? Spotify has 200 million users. They listen to music, but the royalty rates aren't in their control. They don't know how much it's going to cost them. I know it's all practically put Pandora out of business. Pandora, by the way, doing the same thing. In fact, they're wooing podcasters, saying, we want an exclusive.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that would be the interesting thing with if Spotify does buy Gimlet is, do they continue to let Gimlet distribute this to Apple Podcasts and to Google other places, or do they make it a Spotify exclusive? Because if you're making that much of an investment, you could understand why you might say, well, we want to be the exclusive home, but you could also say, well, you're reach is going to be significantly more limited if you cut off Apple Podcasts, as an example.
Right. Yeah, I would see, you're all podcasters, so I include you in this conversation, but I, as far as I'm concerned, I want my show to be everywhere you could possibly get it.
Totally. I could see, I think that's like the dream of podcasting, right? Because it's a spinoff of RSS. It was about distributing audio everywhere, right? But I do think like we are feeling the end of like whatever, that tech is so archaic. The way of distributing a podcast is it's just kind of insane. Like, it's kind of hard to get, you have to train people. And if it's within an interface that people already use and understand, I don't listen to podcasts within Spotify, but I think a lot of, regular casual users, I've talked to folks where that's where they listen to podcasts because that's just where they are. So totally. It makes a certain amount of sense. They just need fix that interface. Cause like,
I was going to say,
It's
Discovery on Spotify is terrible.
Yeah.
We but were, at the same time, you have the potential to have really good discovery. Like, that is the one benefit they have.
It could make that better.
Right now,
yeah.
But they could make it so much better because they already have the analytics of what you listen to and what you like. And, like, Discover Weekly is really good. I mean, you could.
Oh, I love Discover Weekly.
If Spotify wanted to, they could create a Discover Weekly for podcasts.
That's a playlist Spotify creates every Monday based on your listening habits. And it's always got great stuff in it, new stuff that I would like. It's if they did that with podcasts, that would be very interesting. We were a launch partner when Spotify added podcast. We were a launch partner. We were up there on stage with Daniel Ek when he announced it and all that stuff. But we don't notice a lot of traffic from Spotify, I think, because people can't find it.
Same. I mean, Rocket is also on podcast Spotify, and I don't have a lot of direct analytic information about that, and that's actually one of the problems, right?
Right.
But this is a problem of podcasts all up, is that your analytic information is kind of a black box. Because it differs from platform to platform, and you have to extrapolate a certain, amount of information from that. So.
Our number one downloads, I think, is Pocket Cast, maybe iTunes, then Pocket Cast. But that worries me because Pocket Cast got bought by Public Radio, and I don't know what the future is for non-public radio podcasts on Pocket Cast. Apple is doing their thing where they're doing measurements and trying to sell that to advertisers, but you have to use an Apple product to get that, an Apple podcast app to get that information. I hope you're wrong, Devendra. I hope that RSS and the completely democratic method of distributing audio shows remains, because I think it's really important.
It's just, we've seen, I think, for so long, because our podcast just passed 500 episodes. We've been doing it for over 10 years, this last film cast. We've seen this tech for so long.
Yeah.
The fundamental tech has not changed.
No. Nope.
And I think that's the big problem. Like, analytics, doing something more interesting. What I like about Spotify too is that, when you're playing music, occasionally a video will pop up too on your phone, and like maybe lyric info, like maybe there's some stuff from Rap Genius or Genius, right? There's more potential to do more with that interface than just, have somebody listen to an audio file and let the screen be kind of useless. I've been looking forward to something like that too, like better use of metadata, maybe throw up a link, maybe throw up a video as we're talking about it. That could be really cool and really interesting. Mm-hmm. So at least Spotify could innovate on that front. I want RSS to succeed, but, even Google Reader couldn't do it. So who knows how long this will last.
You know, it's really been interesting for podcasts, and I don't know if it's made a difference to you guys, and I don't have any numbers to back this up, but the fact that you can ask Amazon's Echo or Google Home or Siri to play a podcast for you, and just by name, and you get the latest episode, that to me seems like a very nice way for consumers to listen.
It's nice.
It's
hard to
control.
It
makes it so much easier for people to be able to just listen to something on the fly while they're doing something. They don't have to grab anything. They can just ask for it to play. It starts to play.
You have to know what to ask for, though. That's the problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think,
and you have to say it properly, because if not, you get another podcast, and that can be embarrassing.
That's just the world of Echo. Yeah. You know what's weird? I every morning I'll get up and I say, Echo, listen to the daily podcast on my bathroom Sonos. That's the exact sentence I say every day. And it usually plays the New York Times daily podcast. But it turns out there's a daily podcast from Australia or something. And I played that the other day. And it's like, what? So this isn't perfect.
That might have been fun. Yeah. You see, it might have been a nice way to find
discovery.
A new podcast. They were just trying to add variety.
I should
as it doesn't start playing My Dad Wrote a Porno, right? Like that. Don't make that mistake. Otherwise.
Are you amazed?
Name your podcast something close to that.
Are you amazed by the number $200 million for a podcast network?
No.
I'm excited by it.
By it too.
Yeah.
And I think, to be clear, I don't think that there are very few other, producers and networks that could even conceive of getting within this realm of amount of money. But if anybody's going to, it's going to be Gimlet. And, it came out of This American Life and people who have really helped pioneer this format in terms of making money off it and getting mass audiences, general audiences, not our more niche, tech and film and culture things, which are great, but are not the same level of something like, a serial. If anybody is going to get that kind of money, it makes sense that it would be them. You could also say something like Earwolf or some of the others, although I think Midroll might.
How many podcasts do you think Gimlet has, just out of curiosity? Do you know?
I don't know. Probably 7?
20.
20.
That's pretty good.
Can you name any of them?
A startup?
Startup?
Yeah.
No.
Besides Startup and Homecoming, of course.
Oh, Homecoming, yeah.
Crimetown was good. I listened to that.
Oh, Crimetown was really good, yeah.
So, I don't know, 200 million?
I mean, it's a lot.
That's
but
$10 million a show.
It's, like, again, good for the future, hopefully, of podcasts. Yes. Maybe yeah. that.
I just want to say, we have 12 shows. I'd sell for $120 million, no problem. Spotify, Daniel, I love you, man.
Call Leo. But I mean, you could also say that this is, it's not dissimilar from what Netflix and Amazon are doing, where they're, you know, paying really huge contracts out to showrunners.
Yeah.
And this is as much about, you know, creating future content as it is about the existing lineup and saying we're going to have exclusive access potentially to, you know, these producers. And that doesn't seem inconceivable. $200 million doesn't seem inconceivable for you know, that type of deal.
I would love to know, and I don't know if this is published, what Gilmet's revenue is.
Oh, I'm sure it's not published because they're private, but I would love to know that as well.
Well, nobody knows what the podcast industry is worth. According to some, $315 million in 2017 was the revenue. I don't know.
It seems so low.
It seems low. I can tell you, I mean, we're public. We made $9 million last year. $10 million the year before in 2017. So, but I wonder, I mean, I'd love to know what the revenue is so that I can go to Spotify and say, hey, hey,
you mean that one shows?
Hey.
That would be interesting. Cause if they do make this deal, I think it would have to be material enough that they would have to disclose it and maybe
I think they would
their financial things. So, I mean, that at the very least, if this goes through, this could give us some indicator of what certain things are making.
So the question is it based on hype? Is it based on reality? Is it based on actual revenue? One of the things that Gimlet does we don't do is they make shows for brands.
Right.
And that's got to be a much better revenue generator.
Yeah, no, I would think that your brand stuff that you're doing there, you could very easily convince a brand to give you $1 million, you know, to create a, you know, 20 episode or 10 episode show. Yeah. I could see that.
Company, according to one of our chatters, in 2015, Gimlet was estimated to bring in $2 million in advertising when we were making five times that. So I don't really...
You're doing good.
I'm just saying, I would like $200 million, okay?
And this is a rare bit of good news, by the way, for the podcast world, because wasn't it last year Panoply shut down?
Yeah.
And that was kind of a brutal move because there were a lot of shows on that I think were doing really well. And didn't work out so well for that. And it's just crazy. So this is better news. We want to see a healthier ecosystem.
It's like when the house next door to you sells for $100 million. You go... Wow. I had no idea.
You're like, hey, you know, my house is also available.
Do you need a second house?
Yeah. I think I'd move to the Bahamas if I got that kind of money, but I don't know. No, don't worry. We're not for sale. Americans got 26.
Depending on the numbers.
Okay, yeah, maybe.
Message Lisa.
I shouldn't speak for Lisa, should I? She's going to come running in here in a second saying, no, we are.
Yeah, 300 million, and Leo said, no, we're not doing it. 400 million, we're not doing it. Doesn't matter.
We saw what happened to Evan Spiegel, Leo, and you don't want to be Evan Spiegel.
So he got offered, Facebook offered him how much?
Well, I think it was originally $3 billion, and then I think it went up to 10, and the 10 would have been a good move because they're not that.
Wow. Just a little.
But he was thinking, I really got to make these glasses, so... Got to do that.
What a character. That's a hard thing to do. Is somebody, a big company comes to you, they've already spent, $22 billion on WhatsApp and says, hey, we'd be interested. What is $10 billion a number? And you go, no.
Some people do it for the love of creation, not for the money. There we go.
Yeah. I do it for love, not money. Clearly. Americans got, oh my God, 26.3 billion robocalls last year.
Yep.
26.3 billion. There's only 300 million people in America, so do the math. That was up 46% from the year before. This is a report released by Hiya, a Seattle-based spam monitoring service. It analyzed, it has an app. See, sometimes having an app is, you know, for this kind of thing is good. It analyzed activity.
I wish that Apple would do what Android does, which is how to block this stuff.
Yeah, from 450,000 users to determine the scope of unwanted robocalling. They also analyzed how people reacted when they got a call. What's interesting is, according to Haya, people are just not answering the phone anymore.
I was going to ask you guys.
Yeah.
I don't answer my phone anymore unless I know exactly who it is. And even then, sometimes I'm like, no. And because I get the fake calls where they look just like your regular phone number.
It's from your area code and sometimes your exchange.
Totally. And here's the thing. Like, the area code that my cell phone number is from is a place I haven't lived in many, 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 many years. And so, and it's also a different area code than like what my parents have, even though they're from the same city. And so it's one of those things. If I see that area code, I know it's fake.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Right? Like, but what, that's because you don't have kids, right? Georgia, if you get a call from your area code number, but you don't recognize the number and it's the first three digits, you're going to think that's the school.
Yeah,
that's a neighbor.
And also, with my job, I think that it might be a client or it might be a hospital or it might be something else, which I kind of am stuck calling. And we have a lot of, in Canada, there's now an influx of calls from someone that's speaking Mandarin. So you don't really understand it at first. Mm-hmm. And you listen in. Then the second one that's really popular is a robotic, like, voice that's saying that they're the police, they have a warrant for your arrest, they're coming after you.
I got that one from the IRS.
You know, I really did too. I got that one from the IRS and I was like, wait, what?
And that one's a little bit creepy.
It is scary. And then I have to Google it.
Yeah,
it's a little bit scary because they say that they're going to come after you. And, you know, it hits a lot of people. And you know why it works is because a lot of people call back and then they, you know, get fed. You know, they don't want to have the RCMP or police coming after them. And so they pay. But everyone's doing that once for the amount of people that do it. Yeah. They're making enough money to keep these robocalls in action because it costs them almost nothing.
I bought Viagra from a Chinese pharmacy once. And my phone would not stop ringing. The worst part is, this is a few years ago, my ex-wife was so pissed off, she gave my work number to the guys. He's not here. Call him at work. So then, remember that? John's going, yeah. This Chinese pharmacy indicts our work phones. How do we stop? I don't know. I think I said, no, I don't need it anymore. I'm all better. I don't know. It's terrible. Maybe TMI. I overshared. Okay. Haya says, this is a cautionary tale. Don't answer the phone. And whatever you do, don't buy the timeshare.
Be careful who you give your number to.
Yeah.
But in the end, they don't need your number.
These are random.
They find you.
That's
they
not your number. You. Yes. It doesn't matter.
Yes.
So Haya says only about half of all cell phone calls are now being answered. Only half. I don't answer any. In fact, at this point, I don't care if you get my phone number because I'm not going to answer it anyway unless I know you, right?
Yeah.
Totally.
That's terrible. T-Mobile is going to turn on a something they call Shaken and Stirred. We talked about this earlier, which is a caller authentication system. AT&T, Verizon, Sprint said they're going to do it too. The FCC is endorsing. This will limit caller ID spoofing. So it will, everybody has to do it or it's not going to work. But if it does it, then when you get a call with a caller ID, it will actually be the number of the caller. That would be nice. Mm-hmm. FCC has done nothing about this. They say they're doing stuff. There have been arrests. 46% increase last year in robocalls. Did you see how many movies Netflix released last year? What was it? 1,500?
Jeez.
Originals?
Well, they said they were going to spend $8 billion in 2018. So
you can't watch that many.
There's some good shows, I have to say.
Yeah, but how do you... this is another discovery issue. How do you find them? I have to ask Film Girl or Georgia.
Exactly. You have to wait until someone else says something. Or I do use the when it says recommended by, like, whatever, 87% or something like that. I'm like, it's similar to the other shows that I like. Like, right now I'm into Night Flyers. Night Flyers is amazing. Game of Thrones fans.
Night Flyers. Let me write that. See, I never even heard of it.
I think, Christina, I think you would like this show.
Okay, I'll check it out. I haven't heard of it either. I will definitely check it out.
It is George R.R. Martin's little novella show that's based, and I'm not really into, I was like, I'm not so sure I'm going to be into this. We've watched five yesterday, so
That's really the show from sci-fi, yeah. I don't think it's hit Netflix in the U.S. yet.
It has, but it's really good. Well, but that's usually the way
I go out of town all the time. So I've been using foreign Netflix this month, for instance, more than I've been using American Netflix. So that's fine. I'll be in Australia in a week. So it's fine.
Oh,
wow. They're making you travel.
Yeah.
Do you mind?
Yeah. If I had to do this all the time, I would probably not love it. But for I knew going into this year that the first half of the year I'd be doing a lot of travel.
Are you talking to developers at conferences and stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's
cool. We've been doing a global tour called Microsoft Ignite the Tour, where we've been going to a bunch of different cities all over the world. And so we kicked it off in December when we were in Berlin, and then we were in Sao Paulo. And then this year I've been Tel Aviv and Milan. But there've been, there was one in Johannesburg. There's one in DC, like right now. There was one in Singapore.
Do you get to see any of these places, or is it just in and out?
You know what? Some more than others. I was, for instance, able to see a little bit more of Milan, even though it was raining. I also got to see a little bit of Tel Aviv, but sometimes it's just in and out. But
Of business travel. You go to somewhere really cool,
and then you have to leave immediately.
And you don't get to see it.
The cool thing is that when I'm leaving for Australia, I'm actually going to be staying an extra couple of days because we're going to be doing something with the Windows Insider team at the Microsoft store in Sydney. And so I'm going to get to see more places. So
Australia is one of my favorite places. And Sydney is one of the best cities in the world. It's just awesome. And good coffee, which I know is important to you.
Definitely.
Let's take a little break. When we come back, I'm going to give you all an assignment. What show should I watch next? Georgia Dow is here. And we'll talk about her videos, anxietyvideos.com. She's senior editor at iMore. Film girl herself, senior developer, cloud developer, advocate at Microsoft. Also the host of the fabulous Rocket podcast with Simone and Brianna. And that's at Relay.fm, which, by the way, if Gimlet's worth $200 million, I think Relay's worth at least $100. Tell Mike Hurley.
Yeah, I will tell Mike and Steven.
Tell him. You're worth more. And Devendra Hardawar / film is his podcast. He's senior editor at Engadget. You must have something. It could be a movie. It could be a TV show. Something everybody, some hidden secret gem no one's heard of.
Oh, man. There's so many. I will say, do you want it now?
No.
Or do you want
to hold on to it. I'm giving you time to think about it while I talk about LastPass, which is not a hidden gem. Anybody who watches Twit for any length of time knows I'm a complete LastPass advocate and fanatic. I've been using LastPass for a decade, ever since it started. You may remember, but it was about 5 years ago now, we had Steve Gibson interviewed the creator of LastPass. Joe Segres showed him the code, explained how everything worked. Steve Gibson, our security guru, said, this is awesome. He started using it. And then something happened. One of our engineers posted all of this company's passwords, the database, the website, everything on a public website because he couldn't remember them. And we said, you know, maybe we should use LastPass here. We got LastPass Enterprise. If you have a business, you know breaches are the worst thing that can happen to your reputation, to your company, to your bottom line. It's the worst. But where's the weak spot? Well, it's your employees, and it's frankly your passwords. That's why we use LastPass Enterprise. Reduce the threat of breach with organization-wide password management. 100 policies that you can set for your employees. For instance, we require two-factor. You can set master password requirements, so it can't be monkey 123. You've got password resets. You can restrict access if an employee leaves. They can share passwords, and we know employees share passwords, not just with them, with other employees, but with the other people outside the company. They can share passwords, but they don't know the password. So they just see dots, so you can actually set it up so that they can log into the, you know, QuickBooks or the bank accounts or the databases, but they don't even have access to the password. We use shared folders, which is a nice feature of Enterprise that lets our ops team have all the passwords they need. We don't have to individually share it. Our business office has all the passwords they need. It's more than passwords for me. I put everything in LastPass. Database logins, SSH keys. Yes, I put my SSH keys in there. Software licenses, my driver's license, social security number, and passport is in LastPass because I know I have it everywhere. That's the beauty of LastPass. On every device, every operating system, Windows, Mac, Linux, Android, iOS, The first thing I do when I get a new phone, I put LastPass on there. It helps me set up everything else. In fact, now thanks to iOS 12 and Android Pi, it's very easy because it just auto-fills the password. LastPass sits there, and when you get to a site that needs a password or an app that needs a password, just fills it in. And it uses Face ID or Touch ID, so all the security's there. LastPass's password generator makes it easy for people to generate real, long, strong random passwords. You don't have to remember them. You don't have to write them down. It stores them for you. It even has a security check to look for passwords, places where maybe you've used the same password more than once, and helps you change those automatically. It's just the best. You've got to have LastPass. True trust no one, zero knowledge security model. The data in your vault is never decrypted anywhere except on device. It's encrypted and decrypted at the device level. LastPass doesn't have access to it. No one does, just you. If you're an Active Directory user, and I know a lot of people use Microsoft Active Directory, you can use your AD credentials to log in, a single sign-on. Whether your team just needs to share passwords or you're worried about a data breach, LastPass scales to fit your business needs. So if you're an individual, LastPass Premium, great choice. The family, we use LastPass for families because that allows me to share with Lisa very easily. And they all use LastPass, even the kids. LastPass for teams is for a smaller enterprise, 50 or fewer. And, of course, we use the big boy, LastPass Enterprise. LastPass Enterprise. It's the first app I install on any device. It's the first app you should be using to protect yourself. LastPass.com/twit. If you're not using it, you're nuts. LastPass.com/twits. Streaming Observer counted. They say Amazon Prime has 4.5 times as many movies as Netflix. But, look at that, 17,000 movies. Netflix only 3,800. Hulu 2,000. HBO now 815. But if you look at fresh Rotten Tomatoes, Netflix certified fresh movies, 596 compared to 232 on Amazon, 223 on Hulu, and 38 on HBO. 15% of all the Netflix content is certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. That's good.
That's a killer. Yeah, that's their killer feature, right? It's, there's always something vaguely good to watch.
Vaguely. Basically. There's the word.
Yeah. Vaguely good.
It may not be the best thing. It's okay, though. You know what I love? I'm going to tell. I'll start us off. I've been watching on Netflix a documentary series called 7 Days. Have you guys seen this?
No.
No.
Oh,
Seven Days. I'm tracking it down on my TV. Okay. New TV.
I love documentaries, right? And the premise of this is it's a variety of different events. I don't know how many there are. I've watched 7 or 8. It's a variety of different events, but it's the 7 days leading up to. So it's the Kentucky Derby, and they talk to the trainers, and it's the 7 days leading up to, and then the event. They do the League of Legends Grand, Championship. They talk to the different teams. It's really well done.
That's
The opening of a great restaurant in New York, and all the stuff leading up to it. So if you like documentaries. I got to find the name of it. 7 days before.
7 days out.
Seven days out.
Thank you. There it is. Now if you like fashion, and even if you don't, this is fascinating. The Chanel Paris fashion show.
7 days out.
And they show the preparations that go. Oh, there's the dog show, the Westminster dog show.
What's at stake? Yeah, I guess everything.
A JPL launch.
The best restaurant in the world.
It's so good.
Oh, that's cool.
I love documentaries.
That's really cool.
And it's a great,
I do too.
It's a great premise.
I love documentaries.
Yeah, it's a great premise. 7 days out. I think you'll like it. Anyway, that's my pick.
It's a good premise too, because like I feel like every documentary has that meaty moment of where the action is happening, and they just like hone down into that, right?
Yeah.
The big climax of every situation.
Yeah, and you're prepared. Because you've been watching, the 6 days before, and so it's really got some drama. It's well done. All right, Georgia Dow, you already gave us one. You want to give us? You said Night Flyers
on
Sci-Fi.
That one's a lot of fun. But I'll give you another one that's non-educational, but a really great if you're into something scary. The Haunting of Hill House is
really
it's perfect,
exceptionally well done. The character development is superb. The way everything fits together. My biggest pet peeve: the psychology behind it, because I can't do it if the psychology's wrong. It bothers me. I can't watch something. Psychology behind it is fabulous. It's gripping. It gets better as it goes along. You feel like you get it. It's lovely, terrifying. If you have like night terrors, maybe don't watch this. But it's a series. And Stephen King said it is the best in its series out there. So Stephen King loves it.
See, I tried to watch Castle Rock, the Stephen King set miniseries on Hulu.
This is
Hulu. It wasn't good.
This is so much better.
It's okay.
This is it.
All right.
The cool part is there's like little background features, things that you didn't catch right away that you can like rewatch it.
I'm surprised that a psychotherapist, the founder of anxiety-videos.com, is watching a scary series like that.
It's all in good fun.
Once you've dealt with your anxiety, you can watch this.
You can enjoy it.
Or get a video and watch it together.
You can go deep.
You can't. It's really only scary up to the fourth episode. Then it's not as scary because you understand more. So maybe just like if you can make it through the first four, you're good. Wow. Probably.
Wow.
There's it's an exceptionally well done show. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. I've got my pencil. I'm writing this all down.
You should watch this.
I'm going to watch that. Lisa loves horror. I hate horror. I don't watch horror.
It's not like someone jumps out of everything. It's suspenseful.
That's what I like.
But I would say it's towards the horror. It's not like the Bird Box where it's not horror or suspenseful.
Is Bird Box any good? It's just bad.
No, it's not pretty bad.
Isn't it sad people are getting run over for a bad movie?
Well, it's good to see so you know what the memes are about, but it's not well done.
Yeah. No.
Oh, I love it. I'm writing this down. All right. Now, because, you know, this is great because we have three people who really are experts in pop culture and mass culture and film and TV. Couldn't have three better people to do this. How about you, Christina Warren, film girl?
Yes. All right. So I have to. Okay. So actually, I first have a podcast recommendation.
Good.
Because I binged it all yesterday on my flight from Milan to New York, and it's called The Dream. And it's all about multi-level marketing scams, network marketing things.
Oh,
like,
there's so many of those.
Things like, anyway, but it's so good. And Jane Marie, who's done stuff for This American Life, she her company produced it. It's 11 episodes. It's fantastic. It's so good.
The Dream.
It really, really, really good. I'm somebody who thought I knew a lot about that world, and I did. Like it. Enlightened things for me, and it's really, really good. So The Dream, highly recommended. And as much as I'm mad about his revelation at the end of Gossip Girl, I really do like the new Netflix show, You.
Okay.
It's a Lifetime show. That was really good.
Yeah.
Do I have to have liked Gossip Girl?
I'll track that one down.
No.
Okay.
But by the way, that show shows the power of Netflix, right? Because it aired on Lifetime. Nobody cared. It was canceled, and then it hit Netflix, did really well, and Netflix is picking up for the next season, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was picked up because I didn't even remember it being on Lifetime, and I wouldn't have watched it that way. And I watched it on Netflix, and I was like, I think they were like, because you like Gossip Girl, and I was like, well, yeah. But no,
I don't admit that in public, but okay.
Gossip Girl was good.
I once had a DM conversation with John Legere, the T-Mobile CEO, about our mutual affection for Gossip Girl.
Wow.
It's a good show.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. It is a good show.
Wow.
I'm just saying,
I'm writing this down. Maybe I'll watch Gossip Girl. I've never seen it, so I don't know.
You don't need to watch Gossip Girl, Leo.
It might not hold up.
No, you would like Gilmore Girls, though.
I tried to watch Gilmore Girls. I tried to watch Buffy. I tried to watch all of those TV shows.
Great, though.
You would give up about Gossip Girl in about the first 30 seconds. So don't put yourself through that. There are better things you can do with your time. It's a great show, but I know. I feel like I've gotten to know you enough over the last decade, Leo, and you don't need to.
Not for me. That's not for you, Leo. That's not for you. Thank you, Christina. How about you, Devendra?
Yeah, I have so many. Let me split this up by streaming service, I guess.
Wow. I got to get a fresh page in my notebook.
Seriously, Devendra, you need a newsletter.
Yeah. Well, that's what the podcast is for. /film.
Yeah.
Yep. Check out the podcast. It's /filmcast. But yeah, on Amazon, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is a perfect comedy.
You know,
so much fun.
It started terrible, and now that they're up in the Berkshires, I'm loving it.
I kind of hated that, but whatever.
The first season was great. I really enjoyed it. The first couple episodes of the next season, they were moving too fast. They're too crazy. Yeah. It was messy. It felt like they were trying to be clever, but weren't.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's better.
But a lot. also on Amazon Patriot, which is a great spy show that nobody has really seen. But it's like if Wes Anderson was making like a James Bond-esque series, and it's all about a spy. It's all about like the existential doom of like this job, like just breaking you down.
I definitely want to see that.
It's funny because it's about this guy who's a spy. He's tired of being a spy. He wants to be a folk singer, right? And like so he sings these songs.
That's why I like Barry. Mission. He's tired of being a hitman. Yeah. Wants to be an actor. Barry's
it's
great.
Very Barry.
Yeah. Very Barry.
It's a great show. Worth checking out on Netflix, Sex Education, which is a teen show. It's about a pair. It's
I
about
started that because it's Gillian Anderson in
Gillian
it.
Gillian Anderson.
Yeah.
So great.
Oh, yeah, but it's about that.
Kids teaching. And so I think you'd appreciate this, Georgia, because it's about kids helping other kids with sex problems in high school. And I think it's really sweet. It's really like all about like coming to terms like with issues I think a lot of kids are having and even young adults. So there's a lot to love there with this show. And it's just genuinely funny. I love the whole cast.
Sometimes I stay away from high school shows like that because I figure it's for high schoolers. But this is not one of those.
There's so much. Okay. There's so much. Okay. And just briefly, like CBS All Access. Nobody's subscribing to this, but Star Trek Discovery is very, very good. And I think The Good Fight is probably the best show on TV.
I like The Good Fight because I like The Good Wife a lot.
Yeah.
So I like both of those, but I don't want to give CBS like money
neither.
When I pay for cable.
Me neither.
I don't know. It's a weird thing. Yeah,
me neither.
It's a bad system because like these are great shows. I want people to watch it. And then like I'm talking to Star Trek fans and they're refusing to pay the little bits of money, the like two coffees a month to watch their new Star Trek. If I can't sell it to them, I don't know how CBS is selling it to the rest of the country.
So the chat room has a recommendation, and they've recommended this several times to me. I've got to watch it. It's on the National Geographic Channel, but you can also watch it on their website. Valley of the Boom. It's the lives of tech world figures, including their friendships, rivalries, victories, and failures. It's very geeky looking. When you have when you have show titles like Segfault, Agile Method, and
it has Bradley Whitford as James Barksdale, which is kind of
So this is the Netscape story.
It's Netscape. It is, there was a video streaming company and something else, and The Globe. So it's like telling all the stories all at once.
I'm going to
visit. Is it a documentary or is it a drama?
It's like half, so there's interviews with the actual folks, and then there's like dramatized versions of the events.
Oh, interesting. I see Mark Cuban in here, and obviously broadcast.com is a streaming company that's in here.
But it's a natural show. It goes all over the place.
Nice.
I wasn't a huge fan. I would say watch Halt and Catch Fire if you want something.
Yeah, Halt and Catch Fire was so good. Yeah. That was a great show.
You know, I started watching that when they had a pointless sex scene in the very first episode. I said, okay, you lost me.
It gets better.
It does get better. You have to continue because that was a really good show. They got the 80s stuff dead on.
Black Sails is also a good show for pirates. Hence pirates.
Real pirates.
Real pirates. Show pirates. I don't know if real pirate. I don't know if they were real pirates, the people in the show, but they're actors playing pirates.
But it's not.
And it's just fun. Some of them are just brain candy.
Okay, yeah.
We mean like Pirates of the Seas, not like
pirates.
Computer pirates.
This kind of pirates.
Oh, sorry. Arr. Yes, sorry. Yeah.
No, I know it's actors.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any real pirates anymore. Well, I'm the captain now.
There are still real pirates. Remember
that issue in Africa that happened?
Yeah, pirates. Yeah.
There's real pirates. And The Last Kingdom is another brain candy show. It's just brain candy. Like, it's just, you know, you just watch it for silly time of, you know, what that one's like medieval, handsome people, you know.
If I watch all these shows, I won't be here for Twit next Sunday.
you watch them as you go. If one takes your fancy, you have something entertaining to decompress with. And sometimes you don't want to have to think. Some shows are about thinking. Some shows are about just kind of relaxing and not having to think and enjoying whatever scandals.
We call that Vanderpump. And it's great. Yes. We call that Vanderpump Rules. And it's fantastic.
I'm totally with you.
I'm going to add one more because the first season was good. Second season was terrible, but the third season of True Detective, which is on right now with Master Holly Ali, is amazing.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Is it?
I would agree with that. Yeah, it is.
Pretty good, Devendra? You don't think it's great?
I think Sharp Objects was better. Like, Sharp Objects kind of did that, and it's just doing it so differently. This feels like a remake of season one, but it's Mahershala Ali. I love him so much, so I'll watch him in anything.
He is so good in this. And the thing the conceit I like about it, and I've seen other shows try to do this where it's three different time periods and they intermix them. And it can either be Westworld, where you go, what the hell is going on? Or they've done this so well and they've aged the actors amazingly. That
Dorf is back.
Yeah, it's really good. Anyway, enough TV watching. You guys are great. I want to thank everybody for joining us for TWiT this week. And I think we should just bring the same panel back from now on. No, you've
for
got
Super
lives.
Bowl.
Yeah. Every time there's a Super Bowl.
Yeah, you know next year they'll be calling.
Sooner than that, I hope. Thank you, Georgia Dow. Anxiety-videos, if you want videos not just about anxiety, but sleep, mastering conflict resolution, emotional intelligence. Great stuff. I have the whole set. I really love it, Georgia. Actually, you've added more. I do not have the whole set. There's more.
We'll be sending them. Don't worry, you'll get the others.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Georgia Dow is a family therapist, and her partner, Sandra Reich, do these. She's the clinical director of the Montreal Center for Anxiety and Depression, and it really is well done. If you love Georgia, you will love Sandra and Georgia on anxiety videos. Thank you, Georgia, for being here. iMore.com. We didn't talk that much about Apple, but we will next time. Christina, it's so wonderful to see you. I'm glad things are going well. You haven't been hit by a bus lately.
No, it's been a year. Oof. It's been 1 year since I've been hit by a car. So, yes, everything's going well.
Oh, she lives in New York for her whole life. Never gets hit by anything. Goes to Seattle almost instantly. A bus runs her
almost
over.
Almost instantly.
I'm glad, so glad that you're having a lot of fun at Microsoft. That was a big jump from Mashable to Microsoft, and I'm glad
it was. Been going really well. Good. And we're making videos. We're doing good content, and I'm having a great time. And it's amazing because they also let me continue to do things like this and be on and talk with brilliant people like you guys.
My attitude towards Microsoft is completely 180 degrees. I'm really impressed with the new Microsoft. Satya Nadella is brilliant, and I'm very impressed with the new Microsoft. I really am. Really, you picked a good company. Devendra Hardawar, he works for AOL. No, I'm sorry, he works for Verizon. No, I'm sorry, I don't know who the hell he works for.
It used to be Oath, it was AOL, and now it's Verizon Media. You're all part of that. Yeah.
Glad they got rid of the Oath, but everybody knows it better as Engadget, which is the number one gadget blog in the world, and Devendra's senior editor there does a great job. You've been there? How long have you been there?
It's going to be 4 years this year, I think. Yeah.
That feels like an eternity in web years.
It's so much, but I've had a ton of fun here. It was great, like, helping Engadget, like, grow and, stay awesome. But yeah, I also do the /filmcast at /film.com, and I started a new podcast, a tech Q&A podcast at nomoretech.net. That's no with a K.
Oh, I like that. I haven't heard about that. No More Tech.
Yeah.
With a K.com.
Yes, .net.
.net. No More Tech.net. Okay, cool. And how do you get questions?
I field them through Twitter. Just not loading. I field them through Twitter, and there's a Google Sheet as well. Yeah.
It's not loading because I put com. It's net.
.net.
Dummy. Yeah. And, of course, the most recent episode, CES.
CES. Just dealing with all that. But it's actually, I'm taking a cue from you, Leo. Just like, I love sitting back and answering questions from folks.
I do too. It's really fun.
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's just like a nice laid back thing. So this is what I do for fun, I guess.
Yeah.
And TV.
Yeah. I love doing the radio show for that reason, because it's nice to talk to normal people for a change instead of y'all geeks. Thank you so much, Georgia, Christina, Devendra. You guys are great. Thank you all for being here. We do TWiT. Normally, we did a little early this week because the Super Bowl will be back at our normal time, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. That's 2300 UTC on Sunday evening. Come by and watch. You can see it at YouTube.com. Sorry, twit.tv/live, which will give you access to the YouTube, Twitch, Mixer, Ustream, whatever stream you want. There's also two audio streams there, so you can listen or watch. If you're doing it live, go in the chat room because they're doing it live too. IRC.twit.tv. But as always, on-demand versions of everything we do available on the website, twit.tv, or in your favorite podcast application. It's okay if you use Spotify, Slacker, Stitcher, Overcast, Pocket Casts, iTunes, whatever you use. Just subscribe. That way you'll get it the minute it's available every Sunday night. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Another TWiT is in the can. I didn't ask you your predictions. Patriots or Rams?
Doing the TWiT. All right.
anybody.
Nobody.
Silch. No idea.